Film Vault.
Yes, Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. Thank you for joining us. It's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today. Top five traffic stops. Top five pullovers. Side of the road encounters. Anderson, is it your list or the listener list?
Side of the road encounters. I mean, that's a stretch. What do you, need a police officer behind
they're
you.
All traffic stops.
And saying registration and
license ID.
License, registration, proof of insurance if you're out here in Cali.
Is your list?
No, it's a listener list, and that's why I made that gasp there, because one of the multiple things that I meant to do was find the listener who's been hounding me for many months now, not to only do traffic stops, but also scenes that take place at the side of the road.
Oh, the two separate.
Those are his two. Oh. Obviously, this guy spends a lot of time on the road, you know, so I it might be a listener that I've corresponded with plenty, and I'm just drawing a blank right now, so that's upsetting.
Okay.
And I was hoping to have his or her name. I believe it's him. And maybe I'll track that down during the show.
All right,
so, this was a very easy list for me for the first three. They came to me immediately upon this guy suggesting it, or girl, perhaps it was a girl. And the other two, I had to do a little poking around for.
Is this one? So I didn't actually do any Google searching for it. Are these lists that exist somewhere? Like, are there a lot of best traffic stops in movies? Because a lot of times you can research.
Yeah, this is not something that pops up a whole lot.
I had to look for a lot of scenes and then just see what came to mind. So this could be an incomplete
list. I anticipate
list.
Your list being pretty pitiful.
I think it's pretty good, actually.
I anticipate pitiful. Sadness and shame on your part.
No, I'm actually pretty, I feel pretty strongly.
Okay, good.
There will be spoilers and I will give plenty of warning. Plenty of warning. Plenty.
You don't have to exaggerate the plenty there.
Plenty.
How many times will Brian talk about R. Lee Ur? No, that's not him.
R. Lee Irby. Never once. I don't need a lot of
I got a lot of emails from people who are just tired of your obsession with
that's not even my desk.
It's a great scene. Like, you got
it's okay. It's all right. But you love it.
People are
so
emailing
much.
You about this?
Not just a person. Like
this
people.
Is, this
like,
is...
I'd say probably 7 or 8 people said he needs to stop with that fucking story. And the whole reason why he likes this is because he actually talked to Arlie, and it's just an excuse to or a long roundabout way of saying I talked to that guy.
Yeah, well,
you know,
that could be true.
I spoke to him personally.
That could be true. You know, I had a conversation with the man.
You what?
I had a conversation with the man.
Did you?
Oh, let me tell you how it went,
Brian. Let's move on and talk about Flick Fashion.
I appreciate our listeners, and I appreciate the interaction that happens.
Oh, you know what? Patreon.
This is absurd. Don't ever email Anderson.
Absolutely email me. I love the emails. And I've been getting a lot of emails about...
To question my selections.
I get a lot of emails. Oh, I get tons of emails. And, you know, I don't bring them all up. I would imagine that you would get plenty of emails as well. I think that's one of the allures of this show, Brian. But I had this thought the other day. First of all, thanks to all the Patreon people. You guys are killing it.
Yeah, really. Like, what's our count? We're up to. Well, I don't know. It's important to give a count every time. It's public information, though, so put it out there.
What's our count? How many people we have that are going to be listening to this month's bonus?
332 as of now.
Damn! Thanks, you guys.
That's one shy of 333.
Indeed, it is. Now we're a quarter way to 1,000.
I was thinking about it.
A third of the.
And if we were real savvy,
Jesus Christ!
If we were savvy, Brian. A third. Yes, thank you.
That was a test.
It would have to be 33.3 with a little bar over it.
One guy's wavering. He's hesitating. He's like, should I do it? I'm almost halfway there.
Could be
there.
A girl, Brian. Listen to me.
Let's be honest.
Listen to me. If we were savvy business people.
That's a big, that's a big
and if we were all about getting the most bang for our buck and getting the most contributors to Patreon, mm-hmm. Here's the deal. Here's what we'd have to do. And I actually had this thought for about 30 seconds before I realized how fucking gross.
Jack the price up to $50 a month.
One of the allures, one of the many allures of this here mm-hmm. program, but one of the big draws, I think, is people love to hate, right?
Sure.
And people love to hate. And I think a lot of people, a lot of Film Vault listeners.
I get a lot of positive feedback.
I would say about a third of them like the two of us. And a third hate me.
You're
and a third
generous.
Hate you. You
You're
know what I mean?
Generous.
I think that a lot of people who listen either hate one or the other of us.
Anderson, I think there's a 50% you can scrape right off the top that hate us both.
And, well, I don't know why they listen. And I was thinking.
They hate listen.
Would you be quiet? And Brian, and if we were to do a Patreon where it's like you can do a Anderson only Patreon and a Brian only Patreon, I bet we double our numbers. And then what Ooh. We would do is behind the scenes, we'd actually pool it all together, assuming our egos could take it, whoever was winning, and we'd divvy it up. That would be the way to get the most bang for our buck. Because I think a lot of people are like, I'd love to do the Patreon, but I hate that fucking arrogant prick.
Anderson.
So much that I don't want him to get, you know, $2 of my money. You know what I mean?
Here's what we should do. Logan, let's build a separate studio, and that way we'll have each of us in a booth, and we can do two channels. You know what I mean? Anderson
We've been
channel,
talking
Brian
about that
channel.
For years.
Yeah, man. And then like you can
years,
subscribe
Brian.
To just the Anderson channel, just the Brian channel, mm-hmm. and get just the good stuff or the best stuff if they scrub to yours.
Mm-hmm. We do bounce off each other quite a bit.
No, so that's why it's separate studios. Recording booths.
I said this just the other day to one of my chats with Andy talking about yeah I might have forgive
still
me if
doing
I'm already
that.
Oh yeah I'm gonna be doing it until Groupers is complete which
oh,
is completely off track
so,
at the moment because
forever.
I didn't fire my editor but I kind of let my editor go in a nice amicable way
yeah.
just last night we both came to the terms mm-hmm. the conclusion that. He's not going to be able to finish this thing in a timely fashion. I had a deadline of a picture lock, Brian, finished edit, done, completed edit by end of summer. Here we are, end of October, and I don't have a rough draft. So,
speaking of which, ZipRecruiter.
I feel like I should have maybe made this decision maybe a couple months ago, but nothing can be done at this point. You get three choices. You get three things, right? Good, fast, cheap. And you get to pick two of those three. Two of those three, right? And I'm damned if I'm not going to, make it good. It's got to be good. And unfortunately, it's got to be cheap because of circumstances. And I've come to the conclusion it's not going to be that fast. So everything's being pushed down. I'm looking for new editors now. Thinking I might have a couple different editors working different chunks. My original guy's still going to be working on like the initial stuff that mm-hmm. he's got far down the road. So that's a little Groupers update. Mm-hmm. A little depressing, but not bad. He could have finished it, but I think that honestly, realistically, it probably take him about 2 years.
Right.
Because he was moonlighting.
At the pace.
He was moonlighting,
sure.
right?
Guy's got a gig.
So I'm waiting. The drives are being sent back to me as we speak with all of the work that he has done to this point, and that's where we're at. Anyways, I'm going to be continuing the chats with Andy until the film is complete because I'm free until then.
We're
working on the movie. I'm not going to be looking for full-time gigs until after that thing's done.
Will you be doing some editing yourself?
For sure. Now that I'm getting all this stuff back, I'm going to be doing some stuff myself because that's part of the problem, man, is I'm going crazy because I have no control.
Right.
It was all in Chicago. I don't even have I have all the footage, but it's not synced. I can't even.
Let me know how it's going.
Oh, man. Got a lot of work ahead of me. Anyway, it's going to be great, though. So I was talking to somebody, chats with Andy just the other day, and I was explaining to you about our history and how I want to talk to you, right, at work.
It's true. Our initial encounters as employees were tense.
Yeah, tumultuous.
No. They were standoffish.
I just didn't talk to Brian. Now, if we continue to work in some capacity mm-hmm. or another, other than what we do, I would continue that stance. And I would say,
right,
look,
now.
Brian, go over there. Don't talk to me. All right. We'll just stay in our own booths or do whatever. Just as it turns out, we do work together, but our job is to talk to one another. So it's like the one job description that I wouldn't be able to not talk to you. In.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a funny thing.
Okay.
It's kind of funny. Gonna put my hood up over here and not talk to you.
Anderson used to avoid talking to me by putting his hood up, so I couldn't address him. Or if I tried to address him, he would have plausible ways to ignore me.
And then I always follow up and I say, "But I love Brian, and I would do anything for him."
It's true.
My fingers are always crossed when I say that.
Oh man, fooled again!
All right, come on, let's flick fast.
Let's flick fast.
That was way too much of an aside.
Let's get right into it.
I had a hell of a day, and I'm just happy to see you. I'm happy to be actually talking.
What happened today?
Just Attica stuff, boy stuff, and hospital stuff, and
nothing
too serious, but stuff that happens with babies and small ones.
Babies got to see doctors.
Yeah, I had to be on the phone for an hour and a half with the hospital on hold most of the time, waiting to find out what happened, and then I had to go down there, and I'm late for the show today, and I'm a bit manic.
How's he doing overall?
Overall, he's fine.
Yeah,
he was asleep with prune juice on his lips when I left. Yeah,
so things are good.
Things are okay.
Okay. Good to hear. Let's flick past some flicks. Let's
confess.
Okay,
I want to start over. I wish we didn't talk about all that all right. Shit.
Yeah, Film Vault. Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome to the film, everyone.
Yeah.
Brian. Yeah, host.
Beep.
Profession.
Okay. You want to start with the one that I know that you and I both saw?
What do we see?
Speely.
Yeah. I've been getting a lot of people communicate to me through Twitter, and they say, you gotta see this documentary. It's on HBO. It's called Spielberg. It's all about the life and career of Steven Spielberg.
You know what's funny is I didn't receive one email saying you should like...
Really?
Over the last few weeks, I've received dozens telling me you got to watch Brawl and Cell Block 99.
Do you think people overestimate your negative feelings towards Steven Spielberg and think that this is something you wouldn't like, because you know you have the whole Spiegel-y thing, and you know you recognize his craftsmanship as a filmmaker.
Oh, for sure, and that's you know, this documentary really brings that out and puts to bed a lot of my bad feelings, because he owns a lot of the stuff that mm-hmm. I've been accusing him of all these years. Here's my whole thing.
Anderson's senior thesis.
That's not true at all, but what Brian alludes to is because he was like technically in my class. That's just one of many things. He was in my little film program over there at Long Beach State, and he actually walked with us. Most people who listen to this have heard that whole story. He was actually in my... I graduated with Steven Spielberg, like literally.
Well, he graduated with you.
He graduated with me, yeah, so if you must. But one of my main digs on him is I think that he's masterful, and I think he can do almost anything effectively, but he chooses to go for the lowest common denominator, and he chooses to pander towards his audience, and I don't respect that. Mm. And that upsets me. And it's like, how rich do you need to be? But I got a little bit of that answered with this documentary, so why don't you pick up from there?
Spielberg is a 2017 documentary that debuted, I think, a week or two ago on HBO. It is directed by Susan Lacy, and it does, yes, chronicle the life and also the career, for the most part, of Steven Spielberg. Of course, it can't touch on every film he's ever done. I guess it gives a little bit of lip service.
He's only done like 58, I think.
Yeah, he's done quite a few. Spends most of the time on, say, 7 or 8 films. I didn't write
the
down which ones.
Ones
that were the big ones, and also ones that are signposts of his career, sort of marking a turning point, or a high or a low, or a rebirth, I guess, of
right.
Spielberg. He's gone through a few phases in his career. Of course, the blockbuster phase early on, and he kind of tried to become a serious filmmaker, a more serious filmmaker, and that didn't quite take off as it was supposed to, and then transitioned to a more serious filmmaker, but then went back to his roots as a blockbuster guy.
If this was a total failure in my eyes as far as the documentary goes, it would have been a puff piece. It would have been like that Tony Robbins documentary where there was no strife or there was no answering some tough questions.
Sure.
And I don't know who was asking the questions. I don't know if it was the filmmaker that was asking the questions or if he was just kind of pontificating. But Spielberg did, you know, admit that he is a bit of a shy filmmaker at times, and he doesn't like to do stuff that's too heady or too... There's a scene in Color Purple that involved a mirror, and get this. Close your ears, everybody. A vagina.
Whoa. Can we say that, Logan? Can we say that?
He was talking about how, you know, he was too shy to shoot that, even though it would have been more true as to how the book was written, and he was just embarrassed by it. And part of me is like, should people that... frail be making movies, but the guy is such a genius.
So let's start at the beginning. So to that point, number one, the movie does, he gives good answers, which makes me believe that he was being asked good questions.
Yes.
And yeah, he does own up to the fact that he even says when he's like, I wasn't the right guy to direct Color Purple. Like right. He kind of alluded to being in over his head. Like it wasn't
he
the
talks
right
about
movie
his
at
great
the right time.
Failure 1941.
Yep.
And how he thought that it was going to be huge and it was a total flop, and how that just crushed him as a filmmaker.
And it's nice to see a guy who could very easily be argued as the most successful filmmaker of all time, certainly of his era, owning up to mistakes and shortcomings and, no, I didn't do that right, or no, I made a mistake here. And it was kind of nice. So it's funny, to your point, and it's also nice to be able to learn things about a guy you think you know very well. To wit, I didn't realize that Steven Spielberg was the youngest contracted director ever. He was contracted to be a TV director, but he was the youngest contracted director ever in network history
Studio history.
So I was shocked to find that out, but he was a great director. He just had some guys are put on this earth to do certain things. LeBron James is put on this earth to play basketball. He is a savant. LeBron James. He's a very prominent basketball player.
The mouse is dying today.
Mouse is back dying. And Spielberg is put on this earth to direct films. He's astounding at it. And you learn that he was very talented from a very early age.
And another problem,
plucked.
Another, you know, the hipster in me, or you call it a snob in me, you talk to a casual moviegoer, they all love Spielberg. They know Spielberg very well. Dawson's Creek, I remember one of the stories, I was dating a girl who was obsessed with Dawson's Creek, and the kid from Mighty Ducks, his storyline was he wanted to be Vanderbeek, one of them, wanted to be a movie director.
Right.
And I'm like, let me guess, he's got like Spielberg posters on his wall. And she's like, how'd you know? I'm like, because I live in the world.
Yeah.
And so I look around.
Aware of things.
It's just I can't stand that kind of dig a little deeper. Dig a little deeper, and you're gonna find a man named Stanley Kubrick who had a lot of similarities, but all on the right side of the fence for me. You know what I'm saying? He was unapologetic. Did not give a fuck about his audience.
Sure.
or he didn't pander. He didn't like, you know, try and think how many seats, how many asses can we get?
Will the audience enjoy this? Should I do it this way?
This thing is long. It's a talking head documentary for the most part with plenty of clips, obviously, as you might imagine from his movies. I've always said that Spielberg seems like the type of guy I would like to sit down and have a beer with. He seems like a really nice, genuinely nice fella. They kind of get into that, almost a Michael Jackson quality, and I mean that in the best possible way, where he's always forever a kid.
Yeah, he seems he never really grew up. Comes across as very innocent.
He does come off as somewhat... the way that he's holding his hands, it's so cliched. Mm-hmm. Like he's got them, he's got like both of his forefingers underneath his chin when he's.
It's funny. That's an image of Steven Spielberg.
And like, I'm like, why is he doing
just
that
throughout time? Like it's just how he talks.
Yeah, maybe it's him. But in documentaries I've seen in the past with that deal primarily with like Lucas, and then you got Spielberg, you know, juxtaposed next to him. Like, I feel like Spielberg needs a little more George Lucas around him to be more likable. You know what I mean?
Speaking of which, I very much enjoyed the young home video footage of a young Lucas, Spielberg, Martin Scorsese, and De Palma just palling around.
There is some really fun stuff, cool. too, about De Palma and how they all work together, and they would be just brutally honest about each other's films.
There's like, they were competitive with their friends.
It's a time that's never going to happen. I was a little bit disappointed that John Milius never came into the fray. Mm-hmm. I guess he just wasn't considered a big enough name to be part of the included in this documentary, because people aren't familiar with his films, but he never
popped up in the home video footage.
He should have, though. I mean, he was a part of that pack. He was a part of that crew.
Yeah, you're right.
I
wonder if he wasn't either there in that specific time, or they just, like you said, decided he's not a big enough name.
It's a good documentary, not a great documentary. I'm not like, oh my God, you got to see this. Not. Like, I think the Woody Allen 2-part documentary is way more fascinating and insightful.
But this, I wouldn't be proselytizing this to everyone I run into. But for our audience, this is a home run. This is
our audience grew up with Spielberg was their childhood director. He was my childhood director. And speaking of which, that's going to be our Patreon bonus episode this month, as we're going to, and doing my research, which obviously yielded some fruit and I answered some questions and was fun for Spielberg, but I didn't ask myself many times, like, how did I sign off on this? We're really doing top five Spielie films?
Yeah, top five Steven Spielberg films.
So that's going to be this month's, or next month's at the first of the month.
I'd be interested to hear your list.
The new bonus Patreon. We're going to do things like that more often, you know, a little bit more esoteric, like I said, but we're not going to ever do Spielie again. I can tell you that much.
It would be weird to do it twice. Next five Steven Spielberg.
I really wrestled, man. I wrestled.
Really?
And I think that a top five worst Spielie films would have been much more enjoyable for me.
I thought about that.
The guy's so successful. I don't feel bad.
So there's a number of them I haven't seen. I couldn't tell you about War Horse, The Adventures of Tintin. They also spent a lot of time on movies I hadn't seen, like Should I See Sugarland Express?
We'll talk more about that.
Should I See Empire of the Sun?
We'll talk more about both of those
on the Patreon episode.
On the Patreon episode. And it's probably going to disappoint you.
I don't like to hear that.
Yeah.
But yeah, this does capture his evolution as a serious filmmaker. Like I said, he admits he wasn't the right guy for The Color Purple. He's like, maybe 10 years later. And then 10 years later, more or less, 8 years or so, was when he made the Schindler's List. So you know, he got to that point in his life and his career where he was able to make a powerful, serious
film. Pulled it off for the most part with Schindler's List for me. But more on that on the Spielie Patreon episode.
His parents are still alive.
I know.
That was shocking.
That made me kind of jealous.
It was shocking.
It was kind of nice that he still had a nice relationship.
He's a 65-year-old man.
All right, here we go. I saw a film.
What did you say?
Oh, I saw a movie, Brian. Did I see a film? Hey, do you remember that movie that I was going on and on about a couple years ago, Tangerine?
Was that not the foreign film that was nominated for the Oscar?
Yeah, there's Tangerines, which is the foreign language film, which was fantastic.
But there was another one.
And there's another one, Tangerine.
I remember you talking, because I confused it at the time.
Shot entirely in Los Angeles, Brian. And it's about street walking transsexual women, men, prostitutes who walk the streets of Santa Monica Boulevard out here in Los Angeles, shot entirely with an iPhone.
This could be a number of films. Can you be more specific, please?
Shot entirely with an iPhone. Three of them. Three iPhones specifically were used, iPhone 5Ss to be totally specific, and as well as a, I'm forgetting the name of the attachment lens that they also bought, which is like a $50 lens. That's what they shot this thing on, a Tangerine. Fantastic movie.
Impressive.
Very enjoyable movie, considering the limitations that they had. Mm. The guy's got an eye. He's got a new one.
Oh, he does.
It's in theaters.
Okay.
The Florida Project.
Ah, I've been seeing some buzz about this.
Not shot on an iPhone.
No, well,
they use
not,
actual cameras in this one.
Not in that case.
The Florida Project. I saw this in a well-to-do, fancy theater that costs too much, and it was my engagement, my 5-year engagement gift. The wife took me out, and you know she likes to compromise. She likes me to compromise. So for my gift, taking me out to a movie, and we don't get to go and enjoy Blade Runner again. She says, no, I'll take you to a movie, but we're not going to sit in a movie theater for two hours and 45 minutes. No, like, but it's Ryan Gosling, honey. Don't you want to look at him?
Yeah.
She's like, not for 2 hours and 45. I don't want to look at you for 2 hours and 45 minutes. I'm like, all right. So we saw The Florida Project instead, okay. Which I was also very excited to see.
Did she pick that one?
She was excited to see it.
Okay.
And I saw this in like a highfalutin part of town where I don't want to say they're sophisticated film viewers because they are not. And I can say tell you that they
it's
were
code for no Mexicans.
Deeply disappointed when the movie ended. I heard a lot of like, really?
Ooh, wow.
People did not enjoy.
Vociferous.
And I can tell you they're fools. They're idiots. And they don't know a good movie if it smacks them in the face because The Florida Project smacked them right in the fucking face, Brian.
And they couldn't handle it.
I think that especially casual moviegoers, and I sounds like I'm talking down, but I'm not talking down to our audience because they are, for the most part, they're fairly sophisticated film viewers. And then they like movies much more, much beyond the hero's journey and a tight little story narrative where it gets all wrapped up nice and you feel good and warm and cozy and fuzzy when you walk out, or you feel like you're walking taller because James Bond just kicked a bunch of ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
This is a cinema verite, which is a term to say like ultra realism, and that's what this film feels like. It's shot to make you feel like you're this slice of life film. This whole story takes place in these primarily this one hotel,
okay,
that's in Orlando by Epcot Center, right? And it's got, you know, people that like are just kind of cruising through town and they stay there for a few days while they take the family to Epcot. Or it's got people that live there and they pay week to week, right? And there's a lot of those hotels out here in LA.
Sure.
Too. And this follows primarily the kids that live in this hotel. Not a documentary, okay, but it feels real in the same sense that Gummo feels real. Gotcha. Or kids felt real. Like, you know, that cinema verite.
You almost
like,
can't believe
style.
They're actors.
Yeah. These little kids are phenomenal. So the narrative is very loose, and I think that's what bothered a lot of the audience that I was watching the movie with. They were also kind of moaning during the movie and looking at their watches. A few of them left.
Loose narrative meaning what? Like the plot?
Not much is
drifting?
Going on. Okay. The plot is just these kids. So it opens up with a couple, the two main little kids. The little girl is fantastic. I wonder if this movie is going to get any kind of recognition at the end of the year. I doubt it. I think it's a little bit too sad, too dramatic. And not cute and fun enough. You know, child actors, they come out of left field sometimes. Kwasine.
Yeah, she was in The Beast
Wallace,
of Southern Wild. That wasn't fun.
No, but it was powerful. It was empowering. And this is just kind of sad.
Right.
It's sad, but there's like nothing inspiring about it, but it's a slice of life movie.
Giving it the hard sell.
Willem Dafoe is the hotel manager.
Right.
And you love the guy. He's great. You love Willem Dafoe anyways because he's fantastic, but he's really good as the hotel manager. I'm hearing Oscar buzz. I didn't see that. I mean, there was no like great moment for him where he gives some kind of big monologue. I didn't see that Oscar moment from him, but he was like the rock in this whole thing. It was just so the main little girl's mom is about 22, 23. This is her only credit. She's not in any other movies. Even though she looked familiar, she's not in any other movies. She's all tatted up. She's like a big kid herself. She's still a kid, and she relates with her little five, six-year-old daughter, like, you know, almost like a big sister. A lot of bad influence around her, and it's just them kind of hanging around this purple hotel motel.
Is Willem Dafoe the only name in the movie?
Yes.
I mean, they would know or recognize right away.
I believe he is the only name. Brooklyn Prince is the name of the little girl. She plays Mooney, I should say. And Brie Viniate plays Haley, her mom, who is in one movie. Much like Tangerine, he used all unknowns, with the exception of Willem. And real loose narrative, like I said. Real, not a lot of plot going on here until there is at the end where it's like, ah, shit, is this going to happen? But it's definitely worth your time. I really, really like this thing. Right. I really enjoyed it. And you know,
pretty limited release, right?
Limited release, and other than Oscar buzz, which I'm hearing, which doesn't make sense to me, I don't see this thing finding an audience or getting much more of a release. But The Florida Project. And the man knows there's a lot of really funny moments and just fun moments with the little kids. It really takes you back to being a little kid and kind of just getting into shit and wondering. When I say little kid, I'm talking in between like ages like 6, 7 years sure. old enough to talk back. This little Mooney chick was fantastic. She was a revelation. So I recommend The Florida Project.
What did Jillian think?
She really enjoyed it as well. Really? I thought she was hating it. I was shocked to hear that she liked it when we got out because she's hard to please. Mm-hmm. And she's a social worker. And I thought she was going to have, you know, like, oh, I don't want to see this. It's kind of like what I do for a living, right. Which there were elements what she does for a living. But that didn't bother her. She came out saying that's just so sad because, like, that's, you know, what's happening wow. in a lot of these, a lot of the parts of our country and the world. But I always go back to movies like being I say what Ebert, I always quote Roger Ebert, and he says they're great little empathy machines. And this is a great example of that, where it kind of shows you a side of life that most of us are never going to have to endure. And you can't help but wonder while you're watching this movie, this little girl, she's having the time of her life, living free. She's got this cool mom that doesn't really give a shit. She's out with her mom, you know, trying to like, you know, hustle for money right. and sell perfume so that she can pay the week's rent. And she's having the time of her life, but like, what's that little girl look like in 10 years?
What's her future?
What's her future? Yeah.
Oh shit, I was going to ask you a question about it.
I would assume this is probably high 80s on Rotten Tomato. I would imagine critics would this one.
What I was going to ask was, and we did a top five movies with no plot. That basically a plotless, loose narrative, if you will. A story is there, but there's no plot. Was this a candidate for top five movies with no plot?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, okay, so it opens up with these two, the two main little kids, and they're like best friends that live above one. It doesn't matter, but okay. Like, there's two girls.
They're neighbors.
They're neighbors. They're in a similar situation. One of them actually has a job at a diner, though. And then the main girl does not. She does not have a job at a diner, so she's just kind of trying to make ends meet where she can. Obviously, that devolves into other things, more hairy sure. situations she gets herself in to be able to make ends meet and pay for things. But it opens up with the two. Those two kids, the products of those two girls, and they're just sitting like down by the parking lot, and it's just what I'm describing might sound like really dirty. It's not one of those movies where you want to take a shower afterwards, like you do with Gummo, because it's really well shot, and it, like, I really love the way that this guy frames. Like he'll post up a frame where it's like the facade of like this giant orange. Which, because, you know, there's some crazy buildings down there, you know, sure, by Epcot Center. So it's a giant orange. It's like a roadside attraction almost. And he'll sit there and he'll let the kids walk all the way through, running at times, you know, playing. And it's beautiful to look at. And you get the sense of, like, you know, what it's like to be a kid again. So they're these two kids, girl and boy, both like six, seven, eight. They're sitting like by the parking lot, and their friend comes screaming and says, hey, there's so-and-so's in this parking lot of this other motel. So they run all the way over to the other motel, go upstairs, and start spitting on this car. And like, the three little kids are all just spitting on this car. The mom comes out to have a cigarette, the woman whose car it is, and then she sees that they're spitting on the car, and she's like, what the hell are you kids doing? Get out of here. And they're like, fuck you, you're not the boss of me. It's like they're like little just heathens, right? And then they run off, and one of them gets caught, and then we find out who their parents are and what their parents are up to. That's like the beginning of the movie. That kind of sets the tone.
Sets the tone for what's to come.
It's like a day with the kids, a day with the boys.
Day with the boys, that's right.
Love this Florida Project, and the fact that it's actually playing in, like, you know, actual theaters and Willem Dafoe's in it is great, because this is the kind of movie that would normally just never be seen by anyone and not even get, you know, released. It's this really small feeling movie, but the Florida Project. I don't know what it's up for, though. I can't imagine it being up for any kind of award.
Mm.
So I don't know, and that's the only way that it gets any kind of this time of year.
Some kind of something.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, you know, obviously not Oscar. I'm thinking big. Could be, like, you know, Spirit Awards, that kind of thing. It's sure. going to be probably Sag Darling. Wars, yeah.
Independent. Yeah, exactly. Very different film for me. Mm. We were assigned a film.
Oh, shit.
It's very hard to get to. Very hard to get. Mm-hmm. Very hard to get.
Wait a minute. I sent you new films to watch.
I know.
He's starting. No, he's telling the whole story.
Okay.
He's going plot heavy.
This is me. This is him selling it, Logan. Gotcha. Selling it. Logan assigned us Silence. Last week. A film neither of us had seen, but probably should. Directed by Martin Scorsese.
He lied to me greatly because I had already suffered through all of Silence last year when I should have, when it came out. So I was very excited that I had no homework.
Oh, I see.
And that all got ruined in one fell swoop by you.
Fell swoop. You can still flip fast if you want to. Unfortunately, Silence, for some reason, some sort of distribution something, I don't understand.
Because it's religious.
Is only available to purchase for $15.
You know how angry I was? What? When I got that text from
I know. I texted Logan. I said, Logan, Love you, man, but I'm not buying this movie for $15. You're going to have to assign something else. So
It's like Brian's a student in class that's like, hey, what about our homework?
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, I didn't want to
come
in.
You should have come in and said, look, Dad, I didn't watch it because it was $15. Next.
Well, Logan gets to assign us a film as per the rules of our gambling. Uh-huh. And he assigned me A Bug's Life, uh-huh. a film I had not seen, 1998, directed by John Lasseter, Pixar's A Bug's Life. Did not realize this is the second Pixar film produced.
Number two, right behind
Toy Story.
Toy Story.
Did not realize.
How do you not realize things, Brian? How are you? Oh, I also got numerous emails.
Yes.
Of people up in arms about your love. A lot of chatter over there in the emails, Brian. Your love, how you suggested that Inside Out is better than Up.
Inside Out is absolutely better than Up.
All right, stop it. You're digging yourself a deeper hole. And I, you know what I, you know what I type back to these people? I might give him a break. He also thinks that World War Z is better than Mad Max.
I said they're equal. Up has
World War Z, Mad Max Fury Road, equal in Brian's eyes.
Up is a fine movie and has a powerful or memorable beginning.
Equal.
And after that, after the very powerful opening 10 minutes, becomes kind of a fun little romp.
Yeah.
Like a silly little story where the kid and the odd couple story. Mm-hmm. Inside Out is, that's a fucking masterpiece. That's a fantastic film. Fantastic.
Stop it.
I saw A Bug's Life, voiced by Dave Foley, Kids in the Hall, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Kevin Spacey, 92% Rotten Tomatoes. Actually seemed a little high, I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. Yes, Dennis Leary is in this. Yes, he voices the ladybug.
Right, he's a very angry ladybug.
Very angry ladybug.
Well, does that fly today?
I think the ladybug would be a little more accepting
with
to be a man.
With everything that's going on with the transgender.
It would be a little more of a transitioning.
Yeah, I feel like maybe that would be kind of flagged as wrong today.
So what's your thoughts on A Bug Life? My mind now after having seen it is, fine film. I enjoyed it very much. I'm glad, Logan, thank you for assigning it to me. I'm glad I was able to cross the one off the list.
I love that caterpillar. He's dead now.
When A Bug's Life came out.
The German caterpillar, the best.
I was in college and seeing kids' movies for me wasn't cool, so I missed a lot of the Pixar films. I only saw Toy Story for the first time 5 or 6 years ago. I would put this in the bottom half of Pixar movies, and that's not really an insult because Pixar makes fantastic movies for the most part, but this one is, it's fine.
I really enjoyed Bug's Life. Saw it like probably 2-3 times in the theater
this
when it came out.
Ants.
Bug's Life, okay. Far superior than Ants. Far superior.
I've not seen.
You don't have to.
Okay.
It's like a Woody Allen.
I saw the better one.
Color. With a lot of color and kids jokes.
I saw the better one, apparently.
Yeah, Bug's Life is fantastic. And also, you gotta put yourself in the mindset that Toy Story was the only other thing like it at the time. Mm. There's nothing else like this. It's when Disney was still, solely making, paintbrush to canvas movies. Actual art. It was before the CGI revolution came along and changed everything. Now run-of-the-mill bullshit kids movie is going to look better than Bug's Life. That's what happens with technology.
That's funny. Yeah, it's funny. You can absolutely... Pixar feels so timeless almost as a company. They put out films that stand the test of time, but it's clear how far the animation technology has come. It's pretty clear when you watch this movie. I liked a lot about... I love the Flea Circus, one of my favorite things I'd ever seen. You talked about fleas on the After Disaster.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be our bonus content.
Flea Circus.
Yeah, Flea Circus. Flea Circus research. I'm going to know all sorts of things about Flea Circuses, and so is the After Disaster community after this week's time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, be sure to tune into that. Mm-hmm. Does my $20 contribution get me that?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'll be sure to check it out then. Bug's Life. Glad I saw it. Definitely one I may not have been inspired to see otherwise. Good movie.
Logan assigned me a movie called Palo Alto, which I did not see. It was late in the week.
You really didn't see it?
I really did not see it.
It's all right. The only reason I assigned you that one is because you're much harder to pick a movie
right.
for because you've seen everything I have.
I'm like the mom who has everything she needs. Like, what do you get your mom? Like, she's got everything. What's she need?
Recently, you introduced me to Taste, though, and Palo Alto was right at the top of my recommendation list, so I had just recently watched it.
You're talking about Taste.io?
Yes.
Taste.io, which is a fantastic rating system that kind of curates. Thank you.
Okay.
And a listener actually developed it, and... I got sucked into that site and spent a long time rating films. So that's what Logan is suggesting. I will do Palo Alto perhaps next week. I just kind of made a judgment call, and I'd rather talk about this movie instead. And I think it's more timely because I saw a screening of a movie that comes out next week, Bri.
Which is
it's tough to look up even because of the title, which is kind of shitty. 11/8/16.
Okay.
That's November 8th, 2016, right?
Oh, the election?
That's election day there, Brian. That's right. I was kindly invited down to, like, I guess it was like the premiere at...
It's a horror story?
It's a horror story. It's a black comedy, Brian. Get it right.
It's a very white comedy.
It's a very, very white comedy, right?
It's an orange comedy.
This is such a fantastic, fun experience.
Really?
For me to be able to get away and do this. They screened it at LACMA last week. Okay. Our friend of the show,
Garth... Museum out here in Los Angeles.
That's a Los Angeles County Museum of Modern Art. Friend of the show, Garth Donovan, director. A lot of you helped out quite a bit with helping him, supporting him with White Death, which is this new movie that he's working on. He's made, my apologies, Garth. I want to say 4 feature films so far. Philip DeFossil is the one that I flick fest a few weeks ago. And Garth was he lives in Boston. He's a good guy there from Beantown. And he's going to be out in town, and it was about time that, like, I got a face-to-face meeting with him because he was one of the 16 directors that worked on 11/8/16. Okay. And
16 directors. Many cooks.
A lot of cooks. So here's the story. 16 different directors from different parts of the country are deployed all over to their various spots on the day of the election to grab their cameras, and they already have their subjects set up, obviously, and they just kind of hang out with them for the day of the election from morning until night. And we get to see this collection of different narratives and stories and reactions from coal miners to a woman who she's like the chief editor of the political section in the LA Times out here in LA, to a woman who is one of the videographers for Hillary Clinton's campaign, right, to an Indian Sikh taxi driver that lives and works in New York, to this small town business, small business owner who lives in Boston. That was Garth's subject, the guy that lived in Boston, with his wife and his kids. And they all, to a homeless guy and his girlfriend in Hawaii, whose girlfriend didn't even know Donald Trump was running until that day.
Jesus.
Yeah. So we got the full gamut. Got the full gamut. Oh, I got to tell you, man, and I wasn't the only one after the movie. You know, we were kibitzing a bit and, you know, getting some drinks and talking. A number of us were talking about how we really envied that couple that lived in Hawaii.
Sounds great.
Who couldn't care less one way or the other. They were homeless, yeah, but they had the ocean right there, and they seemed happier than the rest of everybody. That was one of the
really,
most poignant.
Really says something, doesn't it?
One of the most poignant things. Yeah. Anyways. Movies like this, we need more of these fucking things. Unfortunately, it's not going to find an audience. It doesn't have any of those aha moments, and it's not. I don't see this thing getting a whole lot of traction. I hope it does. I hope I'm wrong. I really truly enjoyed it. Here's the problem: it opens up with a Sikh New York cab driver who, and they got to subtitle all of his language because he's speaking a foreign language. So you're out. You wouldn't watch it.
I want to read a film.
Trump supporters who might decide to give it a shot will immediately be like, fuck this. It's going to start with this guy. This guy shouldn't even be in the goddamn country. Get him out.
Build the wall.
You know, so all that shit's going to be happening. And the liberals. Oh, the liberals. So many crying liberals in this documentary. So many crying.
Maybe the Trump supporters will watch it.
So here's the fun
sort
part. Piling
on.
Yeah, if that's a sell, if you hate the old Hillary over there, you get to, and her supporters.
Think about how great
you get to watch a lot of them with their soggy eyes.
Like imagine a Pittsburgh Penguins like celebratory like video made of their season, but it was only of your opponent's
fans
being very sad.
I would watch that.
Being crushed, it'd be great actually.
Yeah, some of my favorite things are just the reactions of the fans, like after a team gets swept. Oh, so great. Just the utter shock on their face. Oh, I love it.
USC got crushed by Notre Dame this last week. And so to make myself feel better, I went back and watched some great footage from the stands and when Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush beat them.
Everything you're talking about right now, I don't understand. I don't understand any of it. So listen to me. One of the great things was there was a panel at the end, and Elvis Mitchell, one of my favorites, was the moderator. So that was fantastic seeing him in person up there. I had never seen Elvis Mitchell in person before. He does a great show called The Treatment, where he interviews people. The man is a fucking idiot savant. It's unbelievable how much that guy knows. So Elvis Mitchell was there, and what happens was after the movie ends, they have all the subjects that were in the audience stand up. And I don't think this liberal audience, obviously super liberal audience out here in LA, filmmakers.
At the Contemporary Museum of Art.
At the Contemporary Museum, at LACMA, right? And they have them all stand up, and there's a number of them are the Republican supporter, the Trump supporters that stand up, and then they had a small collection of them go up on stage, including Garth's two subjects. Right. It was the Sikh. It was a small business owner and Boston, his wife. Yeah, yeah. And there is a really awkward conversation that happens in the documentary where this guy, his name's Tom, he's a subject in Boston, a small business owner, is talking about you can't vote for Hillary. She wants to let all these people that want to kill us come into the country. Right?
Sure.
Wants to let like 12,000 Islamists come in that all want to kill us. And so he's up there and he's talking about how, you know, he's sitting in the audience watching it. And he was really upset that was taken out of context because he was talking about sure. I can see how it was probably taken a bit out of context. He was talking about the Syrian refugee thing that was happening at the time, and I'm sure there was more to it than what he said. But he said as that part happened on the screen, somebody behind him goes, "Fuck you." And he had no idea that he was standing right in front of him. So I ended up hanging out with that couple quite a bit and talking with them afterwards because they were, quite honestly, probably the funnest couple that was on the screen.
Yeah.
Because that guy was just hilarious.
I promise you, Trump supporters are much more fun than
Hillary
supporters.
When he was leaving, he was talking to Garth. He's like, "Turn me into a star, Garth. You know where to find me, man. Cast me and stuff." He was fun. She was really put out, though, and she was saying things on stage. This interview might actually be public now. I'm not sure, but she was making things worse for herself, his wife. She was up there saying, "You know, I don't understand. It's very upsetting to be here because racism is just running rampant in this country. I mean, you had... in the movie, a black guy call a white guy a cracker, and everyone just laughed. And, you know, these Indian women are talking about how, oh, of course Kentucky's going to win for Trump because it's all white people in Kentucky, and that's just fine. And I'm like, oh, no, stop it, honey. You're making it worse.
Stop!
Quiet!
Knock the microphone out of her hand.
Like, that was almost like the most compelling part of the entire... I wish that was in the movie. That wasn't in the movie. But... it's a really interesting idea, and I hope that it gets some traction and gets some conversations going.
I want to see the panel interviews.
Set to come out November 1st, limited, obviously, but try and check this out. It's very interesting.
11-8-16.
11-8-16. It's hard to look up on IMDb. You got to do Google 11-8-16 movie, and then you'll probably find it there. They also have like a vet who's got post-traumatic stress disorder. He was in Miami, I think. He was there as well. He had some really, he made some great points about Vikram. Gandhi was the director of that one. Vikram was probably the biggest director involved in this. From Vice and Kumare.
Kumare, that's the one I was thinking of, yeah.
And he's talking to this vet who's got PTSD, and he's like talking about Trump.
Oh, God, I think he was talking about an animal vet, a veteran of war.
Veteran of war. And he says, how could you be voting for Trump? Isn't he kind of like a dick? And the guy's like, yeah, he is a dick. But my government's been nothing but a dick to me, and sometimes you need a dick to deal with that. And I'm like, I get that. I've already like understood both sides pretty decently, I think, better than most people, because most people just don't want to even hear it. But this documentary definitely lends itself to helping you understand both sides a little bit.
I will see this documentary for sure, for sure.
And one of the most fascinating things in the entire thing was the coal miner. He was not there, from West Virginia, right? He was probably the most prototypical Trump supporter in the entire documentary, right?
Sure.
He and his whole family are sitting there like above their TV. It says live, laugh, love, I think. He's got the crosses going. And what's shocking to me is they're watching the news as they're all pouring in, CNN. It's like, how are they not watching Fox?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That would have been my one question. Is like, why were you guys watching CNN and not Fox? Mm. And then what was hilarious, too, was right as like it was getting pretty exciting in the polls, their satellite dish starts to waver and like they lose signal.
Oh, no!
And they're all just sitting there on the couch going, what's going on? And all the liberals in the audience really enjoyed that, watching them suffer.
That's, I'll see this for sure.
11-8-16. All right.
Well, thanks for my attention.
Palo Alto.
Since you didn't get a chance to watch Palo Alto, you want to say a few words about Silence, since you have seen it?
Did I not talk about it on this show last year? I did it on Cinemadix.
I don't recall.
I searched for it and it didn't come up in the films we've discussed.
Okay, good. I'm so glad that you have that.
Probably had something else to discuss.
I did. Snowman, which is horribly bad and just a total clusterfuck, but I don't want to waste my time talking about it over here. And I hate to do this, but I think that my... buddy over there, Greg, on Cinematics. I'm assuming he saw it and he loves it, so I'm going to have a conversation about Snowman over there instead.
Remember back when you started Cinematics, you said it would never interfere with the show?
It doesn't interfere.
But then you also wanted to cut
I had too many. I have five movies to talk about this week. What do you want from me?
Okay.
All right, I'm picking and choosing.
It's the biggest release of the week, but choose not to talk about it.
Snowman came out this week?
Yes, it did.
It's awful. All right, let me just say a few words about this real quick. Not since The Counselor and since then, The Accountant, have I seen such... just a clusterfuck of mistakes and wrong choices and who the fuck cares and convolution. It just, it's not even bad enough to see just for the fun.
Here's
the
shocking part.
Nonsensical and just, it does not, I couldn't have cared less about any of it. And it was supposed to be creepy and then it just turns into cliche. It's unbelievable that that much talent and money could all be in one place and make something. It felt a lot like The Counselor, which was just not good. Counselor might be a little bit better. Like, there's nothing, not one scary moment. And it was just bleak, which, you know, I don't like that anyways. I don't want to go on and on about Snowman, but what's shocking about Snowman, and I bitch about Rotten Tomatoes, you know, kind of skewing people. 8% right now. It's 8%, I think.
Yeah, last I checked, it was 13 or something.
I think it's like 21 or 22% users, you know. I went to the theater just last night, or two nights ago, Monday night. Early showing. Oh, no, late showing. 9:30 on a Monday night. It was half full.
Really?
Ton of people still going. They don't give a fuck. Either they're too dumb to look at Rotten Tomatoes. Ton of people left, too. I watched a lot of these people.
A lot of walkouts?
I think they were thinking they're getting to see something creepy, and, you know, like, and there's just, it's just so slow-paced. Val Kilmer's in it, and he's doing some kind of Marlon Brando thing from...
From Dr. Moreau?
No, from Godfather. He's got the big cheeks, and I think his voice might have been dubbed. It was really weird, and he looked like an old grandma.
Speaking of, he does a weird thing in Palo Alto, too.
Val Kilmer?
Yeah, he's in it. Very, like, two brief scenes, but a little bit of a weird character choice.
Next week, Palo Alto, I will do that. Silence, I did not enjoy. I think you have to be religious to actually really appreciate it. I think you have to have a deep feeling and belief in a higher power, or if you're Catholic, all the better. I called it The Passion of the Priest because it felt like it was just a priest really taking a whole lot of abuse. Andrew Garfield just really being destroyed by these Japanese, what were they, soldiers, officers?
I'm not quite sure. I didn't really understand the history that much. I wasn't that privy to it beforehand. But I did understand that Andrew Garfield was very religious and cared a lot about his fellow Christians, who he was a missionary,
right.
So he cared a lot about the people he was there to teach the word to.
Right.
And it was tortured he was tortured in a way that he wasn't being tortured himself.
No, they were
emotionally tortured because of what they were doing to the people he cared about.
They were torturing his devout followers and anyone who dared to actually think of Jesus as a savior. And, you know, watching a part of me is like, yeah, you know what? We should have probably slowed down a little bit with trying to turn everyone into a Christian back then. I think there was a lot of forcing going on. Right. A lot of forced hands were picking up those Bibles.
Wait a minute. You saw this and rooted against the Christians?
No, but I was watching it think I didn't really have a whole lot of sympathy. I'm going to be honest with you. Especially
sure, I mean,
because of Andrew Garfield. I'd already seen him as Passion of the Soldier with Hacksaw Ridge. I mean, that guy likes to...
Yeah, I mean, if you're not a religious person, I can see you not understanding their passion. But at the same time, I think you can take issue with how these people were treated.
Oh, for sure.
On a human level.
A lot of cruelty. Yeah. Yes, there's a lot of cruelty in humanity. But maybe don't give them an excuse to be cruel. Like, they do things like, okay, you don't believe...
Don't let them believe what they want to believe.
They were kind of forced into believing in Jesus anyways, weren't they?
Well, they were kind of forced into not believing in Jesus, and Andrew Garfield was there to help them believe in Jesus.
I think that the real story, though, is probably like...
I'm sure there's a very interesting history lesson there that I'm missing.
I really enjoyed... There's some great scenes where, like, the lieutenant, the evil Japanese warlord or whatever, who's in charge of this internment camp.
He's a bad lieutenant?
Bad lieutenant. Oh, Brian, stop it. What? You can't bring that to the table. All right, here we go. So he'll like, he goes and he's trying to say, hey, you guys Christian? You guys like the old JC over there? And they're like, oh, no, we don't like JC. We don't like Jesus. He's not for us. You know, I'm just over here doing my thing. And they're like, you promise you don't like Jesus? Yeah, we promise. All right, how about you put your foot in this Bible then? Why don't you step on the Bible? Like, that's how they were figuring it out. Sure. And like, they're so scared of like what might happen to them. Was it a Bible or a cross? It was a Bible, right?
It was like a tile with a cross on it.
Tile and a cross?
Yeah.
Why don't you spit on this?
It was a religious symbol for sure.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed that. And then there's this great scene where they... this makes me feel sound like such a horrible person. But it was also a beautiful scene. And I'd never seen anything like it as far as torture goes. And leave it to Scorsese to come up with some inventive things, or at least, you know, find some things in textbooks and say, you know what, I want to put that on the screen. There's three guys on crucifixes. We've all seen that, right? That's old hat.
That's fine.
We don't need to see that anymore.
It's a good time.
Crucifixes or crucifies? Crucifixes?
I've only heard crucifixes.
Crucifies. Crucifixes. Anyways, but not like on the top of a mount or anything, Brian, in the sun. Oh, no. In the ocean. High tide, low tide.
Oh, no.
Oh, and it was for real. Like, these guys were out there with these waves just slapping them silly. Well, that was a beautiful shot. That was fantastic to look at. And then when high tide comes in, you know, it's
like, you got to figure out what happens.
It hinders your breathing, Brian.
Also, the salt water probably bad on your wounds. That's probably the least worst.
Didn't quite understand Adam Driver's accent, though.
I didn't understand Adam Driver altogether, really.
Yeah, sure.
I do Fair like enough. That guy. It's so funny how quickly Adam Driver has become like
he
a staple.
He is.
Do you remember when we first like celebrated Adam Driver? Do you remember?
In Llewyn Davis.
Uh-oh. He was just the weird background guy that had that deep voice. That was all he was. Like, he didn't do anything else in that movie, but he's totally stood out, right? That was the first time we ever saw him.
Boop. No.
Oh, I love that song so much.
Can you get that song, Logan?
I love that song. Let's come back with that song.
Please,
can we do that?
Please, Mr. Kennedy, ship me into outer space.
God.
Outer space.
Space. We out. Both did not, neither one of us really fell for that movie, but that song
that scene
just
was fantastic.
Fucking killed it.
That's when you know you're in the presence of great filmmakers, when there's an otherwise unremarkable film, but that one scene stands out as an instant classic.
And it gave birth to Adam Driver for us. Are we going to bump out with it, or are we going to play it real quick and then get out of here?
In the outer space, I sweat when they put me in the pressure.
Yeah, but we want to go to the Papa Please into the verse.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate the game.
No, it gets all muddled up.
Justin Timberlake and Isaac.
No, you just do the puh-puh-puhs into the verse. If you do two puh-puhs.
Puh-puh. All right, let's skip ahead a little bit.
Why don't you probably go to the show and start playing music?
1 second, please.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Like, who is the weird guy?
I don't want to go. Don't show me in the outer space.
Oh,
please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to go.
Don't show me in the outer space.
I sweat when they stuff me in the pressure suits. Rubble, helmet, dashboard, and boots. Nowhere a bit.
Outer?
In gravity
space.
Need to breathe.
Outer?
Don't need to be a
space.
Reading me loud and clear, roll, please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
Oscar Isaac's character, Louis, was so upset.
Oh,
please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to go.
Please don't show me into outer space.
I'm 6'2", so perhaps you'll tell me how I fit into a bag.
Keep going.
I want to see what year. 2011?
2013.
Outer? And he's just, there's not lyrics. These aren't lyrics written on like any kind of sheet music or anything. He's feeling the music, feeling the song, and figuring out where to fill the holes.
Logan, is he playing an instrument, or is he just doing the...
Yeah, he's playing a guitar.
You know, I'm so glad that this happened with unknown Adam Driver, because if it happened now, it wouldn't be nearly as good.
Wildly distracting.
And because he was just such a weird force too. Like, I'd never seen that anyone look like him.
Of course.
I never would have guessed that guy was gonna like become huge. You know? Was he already in Girls? I heard that like he like just like unloads ropes onto a girl's chest or neck in a
ropes
in Girls. Yeah. Semen, bro.
It's enough. My mom's listening.
Hey, Mrs. Bishop.
Coming up next.
You know what a pearl necklace is?
No, stop. Would you please?
Well, I'm just trying to put it in terms that she might understand.
Yeah, because now Brian's going to have to explain to her what that is.
Ask your boy what
I'm
a pearl
getting,
necklace is.
I'm getting a text, I'm sure.
Are you going to get her pearl necklace for her birthday? She likes pearl necklaces.
It's not nice. It's inappropriate, frankly. Mommy hasn't even started drinking yet.
It's true.
Easy.
That was coffee.
Coming up next, top five roadside. No, top five traffic stops. I almost messed that up. Traffic stops next.
Gone separate ways with you. I seem to be displaced. What am I gonna do?
Anderson, people still cramming in their Halloween costumes and their Amazon orders.
Cramming.
By the way, it's Friday when this episode comes out, so if you still want to get your Halloween costume on Amazon, get the 2-day ship and it'll be there by Tuesday. It'll certainly be there by Tuesday.
Everything Brian just said is true as far as my math tells me.
Someone got a costume mask prop, a Mac Myers mask, adult one size.
I think you can make that look like a Trump pretty easy.
Mike Myers mask?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get you. You probably
make the hair yellow.
Make it sort of orangish yellow, yeah.
I did love that scene from Baby Driver where they were supposed to get the Mike Myers mask.
Yeah, and you got the
Austin Powers.
Yeah, baby.
Forgot about that. Someone got a Harry Potter Ravenclaw robe.
Fuck that movie.
A Masters of the Universe He-Man. I looked at it to make sure it was actually the t-shirt that like is printed with muscles because, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't have the muscles, you're going to look kind of silly. Someone got the printed t-shirt as well as a French mime costume to be a French mime.
Remember when Robin Williams was a French mime in Shakes the Clown?
I've never saw Shakes.
Get out of my house, please.
I will leave right now. But first, let me finish the Amazon things. Other things purchased through the Amazon banner on AndersonandBrian.com include someone got a book entitled Darren Aronofsky's Films and the Fragility of Hope. Sounds like a heady read.
That sounds like an apt title as well.
Well, well put. Someone got 300 Medela breast milk storage bags.
You know what that is?
What's that?
They're having like it's their bridesmaids.
Six pregnant bridesmaids?
Six?
Doing a lot of pumping?
I was thinking 30.
Oh, I see. 10 each?
Yeah.
That makes more sense, actually. Speaking of six, someone got six doorknobs.
What if that's ever happened where like someone's getting married and she's pregnant and all of her bridesmaids are pregnant too?
Oh, I'm
yeehaw! I want to see that.
I bet that happens.
You think so? They're all standing there with their bridesmaids' bellies hanging out?
Logan, do a Google search, image search for pregnant bridesmaids. I wouldn't be shocked if there was one of them all pregnant.
Mm-hmm. All the same dude, too.
Someone got a queen-size mattress. All the same guy. He's high-fiving himself. Someone got
actually, you want to be. If you got six kids on the way, no, you're out.
Yeah, they all start talking.
He's probably pretty dumb, though, so probably is high-fiving himself.
Fixed HD infrared. Oh, look at that.
Ah, fuck.
There you go.
I don't like
night vision camera, a dome security camera.
Where does it say where they're from?
Someone got a.
I'm gonna guess Tennessee because the orange and white. Volunteers, go Vols!
Someone got something like a vinyl pack where you can make your own stickers and vinyl cutouts, and it's a whole thing. But thanks for getting it through us. It's an elaborate. Speaking of elaborate, someone reloaded their Amazon.com gift card for $187.47. Very specific number.
Maybe because they had like one that had, and they were trying to get up to 200 exactly.
I was thinking more like they probably put it on a refund. They got a card with a refund put on it because they couldn't give the cash back. Mm-hmm. That's my thought.
Perhaps.
A Bulova men's watch.
Bulova.
A Skunk 2 sports shock for Honda Civic. Someone got a deer cart for hauling away deer carcasses for when you actually like go hunting. Because obviously it's a 500-pound deer. You can't, like, you know, walk away with it.
Or humans.
It's called a deer thing, but I assume it's for humans, too.
I don't think it would sell as well.
A shoulder position, shoulder positioning support system. It's kind of like a wedge for sleeping. An elaborate train set, railway deluxe set. Green Bay Packers jersey, Clay Matthews. Los Angeles Lakers polo and the Atlanta Hawks polo. A 5-LP set of The Queen's Dead by The Smiths.
The bitch is dead.
As well as a Echo Dot, Amazon
She's not,
Echo Dot,
though.
And a 12-cup food processor.
God save the queen. They've been trying to save her or kill her with that over there. All the English pop stars.
According to the Smiths,
that's right.
Dead.
I call the Sex Pistols pop stars.
Wow.
Hey, Logan, you been watching that Mindhunters at all?
No.
Mindhunters? Kind of get your mind in the gutter a little bit
I'm watching
there.
Ozark right now. Uh-huh. Excellent. I plan on doing Mindhunters after, though.
Mindhunters. I want to love Mindhunters, but then it turns into CSI, and I'm like, or Law and Order, and then it's like interviewing like one guy after the other. I'm like, all right. And then it gets back to some sweetness with Kemper, and I'm like, I'm in.
Check out Ozark, though. It's got Breaking Bad vibes.
Really?
Yeah.
I already got that, though, with the Better Call Saul.
Well, that's out of season right now, so if you want something to watch, Jason Bateman's great.
Just finished telling you that I'm in the middle of Mindhunters, which is taking up an exuberant amount of time.
Talk about some movies.
Here are the films that were click-throughs since the last time I saw you. Siggins was that click-through, also known as Signs. I always called it Siggins at the time because I thought it was hilarious. Hello, one ticket for Siggins, please.
It's good stuff.
Frozen.
You had a dad joke at age 25.
Frozen was clicked through as well as Red Dawn. I wonder which Red Dawn. I'm hoping the real one. I'm hoping the good one. I'm hoping the John Milius one. Hoping John Milius one there
John
over there.
John Milius.
Donnie Darko was clicked through. 4-disc limited edition. Holy shit, they're trying to squeeze blood out of a stone.
I bet it includes a director's cut.
Best Darko. Does. You know what? Donnie Darko is a fantastic film.
Sure is.
I just can't understand how that could be 4-disc limited edition. You get every single take ever made.
It includes S. Darko.
War for the Planet of the Apes, Planet of the Apes trilogy, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Spirited Away, Blade Runner, The Big Six, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Brawl in Cell Block 99.
You're going to sped through those.
Fuck to the yes on the Cell Block. Brian, you should watch that probably.
You think so?
Spider-Man Homecoming.
If only you had a chance to assign me a film soon.
The Big Six, Blade Runner. and Spirited Away. I get a lot of shit for loving that Spirited Away because it's kind of like the Spielberg version of anime, because I admit that I'm not a big anime guy, so I only see what's on the surface, what's like shoved down my throat, and it's all by the same
Hollywood
guy.
Hollywood wants you to like
it's all by the same guy. Oh. It's like Ponyo. It's all by the same dude. I need to like spread my wings a little bit.
All right. Well, there's still time.
I don't like their mouths. They're too round.
Back to the show. Hi, I'm Dave Chappelle. This is The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com.
Please don't take
yep, welcome back. Kind of excited about this list. This yielded more fruit than I was expecting. I thought of a couple right away, and I was like, how are we going to do this? Ended up yielding fruit.
You know, my biggest problem with this one was getting TV shows confused. How many countless times have we seen somebody get pulled over on a screen, whether it be small or big, right? It happens a lot. There's a lot to pull from out there. And a lot of the time, like, I would think of one, and it would be tickling my brain, and I'd finally track it down in that deep recess of my brain. I'm like, TV. Yeah. That was a TV show. Like,
wasn't there one where the... Oh, yeah.
I would like to thank Andy Crest for this here episode, this here topic. He's
thanks,
the one who suggested
Andy.
It. He's also one of the countless people who told me to yell at you for your Arlie Emery stories over and over.
Andy, you can fuck yourself.
But Andy suggested this one quite some time ago, and we're just finally getting to it. Good one. Good topic. Runs the range, too. Runs the gamut of some very, very tense, scary,
yep.
Violent at times moments.
Some funny.
Some very hilarious. Yes. So this is one of those rare weeks where I am actually kind of excited to see what your list is, because I'm anticipating at least one or two that I did not retrieve. I completely forgot.
Yeah, hopefully. I think there's a couple here maybe you hadn't thought of. One of them from a movie that rarely comes up, despite being a good movie. Oscar-nominated film.
Why don't you go ahead?
Number five for me. Logan, get that clip ready.
How many clips you got?
I got one clip.
Me too. And you did it on five?
I did.
I did mine on four.
It's like there's a huge difference?
No, it's just strange. We're both like, we pick clips for like lesser picks.
Well, the reason is because my number four, three, two, and one are all longer scenes that are really, they're visual and they don't lend themselves to clips. But number five is iconic. It came to me kind of late and I was like, oh, I guess this is my clever pick, although it definitely counts as a traffic stop. Or what?
I was going to talk to your mom for a minute, but okay. I realized she wouldn't be able to talk back. But I was going to ask, Mrs. Bishop, what did you do to him? Why does he have to be clever every week?
Sorry,
but what's he trying to prove?
But this one totally counts. I was thinking about poor people getting hassled by the cops, you know, getting stopped for no reason. What?
You just said poor people.
Yeah. It's a trope.
Okay.
It's just one of those things that, you know, here, driving while black, you know, pulled over, you know, get hassled for being in a crappy car, being, you know, just the color of your skin.
Sometimes it's a good car. They're like, well, how are you driving this car?
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Well, that's funny because this one actually takes place in a land speeder. Let's hear the clip.
I just thought of one. No!
God damn it.
How long have you had these, Troy?
About three or four seasons.
They're up for sale if you want them.
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Move along. Move along.
What is it with nerds and their obsession with mind control?
So, of course, that was Star Wars from 1977. The traffic stop was done by an Imperial stormtrooper, and the vehicle happened to be a land speeder. And the man you heard talking was Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the stop happened to be at an Imperial checkpoint in Mos Eisley. But traffic stop it was. They were checking everyone for droids. And even though they had the droids they wanted, Obi-Wan used the Force to convince them it was not the droids they were looking for. Because they were weak-minded, Anderson, you see. Weak-minded.
I'm doing it. I've never done this before. I'm doing it. I'm looking at my list.
You're making
I'm changing my
swap?
List. Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't have much information that I need to see the clip. But it's
This is poor planning. But it cannot be left off.
It just can't. It can't be because it's better than my number five, Brian.
All right. Can you tell me?
I'm trying
number,
to be honest.
Can you tell me your number five was?
Winter's Bone.
Winter's Bone. I remember that. I remember the
great scene. Great scene.
That is a bleak. Speaking of
bleak
films,
Garrett John Hawks, and a little.
I remember the movie.
Jennifer Lawrence over there. Yeah. Very, very, very
bleak.
It's a bleak film. Deborah Granick is the director of Winter's Bone. Came out in 2010. It was my introduction to Jennifer Lawrence. I'd never seen her before, even though she was in an episode of Monk before that, as well as a few other lesser known things. So I probably saw her. She played a mascot in Monk, so perhaps she had a furry head on, and I never actually saw her. But this is the first time that I really took notice of Jennifer Lawrence. I remember watching this with my then girlfriend, now wife. And she was quite taken with Jennifer Lawrence, too. Who is that? This girl is fantastic. We both watched this, Winter's Bone together. A very good movie. Not a movie I would ever want to revisit.
I was going to say, no desire to go back and see it.
John Hawks. It was also my introduction to John Hawks. I wasn't familiar with him, I don't think. And Garrett Delahunt.
He was nominated for an Oscar, I think, wasn't he?
He might have been, or it might have been for The Sessions or whatever. Remember?
I think it was for
maybe
this
for
movie.
Both. Maybe for both. Garrett Delahunt is the cop pulling this guy over. He knows the character, and he knows that they're up to no good. And the Ozarks. Speaking of
everyone kind of knows each other in this neighborhood.
It is Ozarks. It's in the Ozarks, right? I'm not getting my. It's not the Appalachians. No, it's the Ozarks.
I don't remember that.
Ozarks. And
I remember there's a lake.
There are guns shown, but you know, one of the reasons why I'm so okay with kicking this off is my number five. A great scene is really, really well developed, but just not much. There's no payoff. There's nothing really happens. It gets you on the edge of your seat. You're concerned, but there's no the thing cools off, which you're happy about. So I'm putting Black Sheep on there instead.
Black Sheep.
Oh, such a great scene, and it just came to me in a flash.
Oh, I did it. See, it was almost
Road.
Almost my list was Tommy Boy.
Road.
Bees. They're sting crazy.
Oh, that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's better.
I always get Black Sheep and the Tommy
Boy.
That's
the one where they pull over and he's like, he's just run out of the car and act crazy. And he and David Spade act like they're being stung by bees.
No, it's where they're in the cop car themselves and they get pulled over by the other cop, right?
Okay. You have Black Sheep, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You have the right
one. And then they got the nitrous going and they're like all high as fuck and they're driving like 2 miles an hour. And they're like just tripping out on words like road.
No, wait. I don't know if they stop though because they end up like driving away fast.
All right, the Witch's Bone is on there. I need more time. I need more.
You're the one who took your sick kid to the hospital.
You know what? He did dig into my last 2 hours of research, which is usually during his nap time.
That's sweet
on day
time.
Of it's absolutely. I park my ass and I polish my list, Brian, and I do last minute additions and retractions. This list is forever fucked.
And now here we are.
Black Sheep. Put an asterisk next to it. They get pulled over, right? They do. I remember
can
the cop.
Play some of the
they're going super slow when they get pulled
How
over.
How you doing, buddy? Transporting a prisoner. 12th Precinct up in Buckley Town. My sergeant didn't give me any overtime, so I'm trying to do it lickety-split.
Tell me, officer, do you have any idea how fast you were going?
Yeah. Well, I got a 426 Hemi in her. Three-quarter cams, nitro boosters. I can get her up to as good as 155. Never do, though, of course, unless I'm chasing a cute chick in a Ferrari.
Not having it.
I guess I was going about 65 tops.
Seven miles an hour. And normally when I stop people, they pull onto the shoulder.
Pull back.
I don't know how you do
the
things up
highway.
In Buckley Town, but down here, we are protective of the other drivers on the roads.
Roads.
Quiet back there.
Taking enough guff from you for one day. Raving psycho. Butchered 400 chickens and screwed a beagle. Taking it back to
worthy last minute addition.
Well done.
You know
much
what?
More enjoyable. You know what? I think on the spectrum of light to dark, you can't get much farther apart than Black Sheep and Winter's Bone.
Oh, yeah, we can. Wait till you get you know my number one. I assume a lot of my little listeners know the number
you know
one
what,
as
though?
Well.
I will say that Bad Lieutenant.
Hey, shut your fucking mouth. Just shut it down, Brian. What's the matter with you?
The film I'm thinking of is far more enjoyable. I would much rather watch that again than I would rather watch Winter's Bone. Would you not?
Wait,
given
till we
the
get
choice
to my number one. You can't be serious.
Would you not rather watch?
It's one of the. No, we'll get there.
Okay.
Right? Give us 30 minutes, guys. We'll get there. And girls. Wait a minute. I can't wait to get to number one because I don't think that you've. All right, let's. Yeah. Road. You know what? That's my number one. Road. That was fantastic. That was just so much fun. What year is that? 2006, 2005?
Much earlier than that.
2012,
1994. 97?
99, 98.
He died in 98.
99, 98.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he? 98?
You know, I lose all the aughts. Like, they're just completely, like, washed clear of my recess.
96.
That's what I said. That's exactly what I said. You know what? No, I really do get the 90s and the 2000s.
You really do.
Because those two decades were very similar for me. Just a lot of aimless wandering and story collecting.
Number four. Number four, fantastic scene. This was the last one that came to me, and I actually bumped off a different movie for this. But a fantastic scene in No Country for Old Men when Anton Chigurh hijacks a police car.
Yes.
Police car after killing the officer in the opening scene of the film. And he comes up to he pulls over an unsuspecting motorist.
This is also kind of clever, Brian, a little bit clever.
Why?
He's pulling him over, I guess, traffic stop. But
he pulls him over. The cop pulls over because there's a cop car following him. He thinks he's an officer.
Okay.
Just because he's not an officer doesn't mean it's not a traffic stop.
A little clever.
All right. Well, you're not going to like the rest of mine, though.
Oh, Jesus.
This is the first time you see the use of the, what do they call it technically?
The air gun.
Yeah, the cattle gun, but it's actually a...
it's a Z2865. Isn't that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for real. Captive bolt pistol. Captive bolt pistol.
Benny's video.
AKA cattle gun.
First time. It was not the first time that I saw a cattle gun used.
No,
in
this film. In this film.
But it was not the first time I saw a cattle gun used.
Really?
Yeah. When was Benny's, Benny's video.
Oh.
Michael Haneke's film, Brian. Very, very tough to watch. Mm. Benny's video used it on a girl.
It is a startling scene.
Just off screen.
No Country for Old Men. Because you don't know. What the hell is that thing he's carrying? Is that an air tank? Is that a breathing machine? Oh, no. It's a weapon. He just killed that guy.
I thought candy was going to fly out of it. It was going to be a big joke. Because it's the Coen brothers. They make comedy.
Well, something did fly out of his head. It was brain.
Mm-hmm. Brain candy.
Number four for you. Well done.
Number four for me. Oh, it's the only one I got a clip for. I am not a big fan of his, but I really was a sucker for this movie. 1997. Directed by Tom Shadyac. Shadyac. Let's hear the clip. You're going to hear a little Jim Carrey explaining to the officer exactly what he did wrong. Liar, liar. Number four for me.
You know why I pulled you over?
Depends on how long you were following me.
Why don't we just take it from the top?
Here goes. I sped. I followed too closely. I ran a stop sign. I almost hit a Chevy. I sped some more. I failed to yield at a crosswalk. I changed lanes in the intersection. I changed lanes without signaling while running a red light and speeding.
Is that all?
No.
And then he points to the
I have unpaid parking tickets.
And they open it up and they fly out like snakes
they
in a can.
They cascade out. Yes.
Be gentle.
Liar Liar is one of those movies that is exactly what it should have been. It touched every base as it ran.
There's so many little happy accidents with lawyer and liar lining up, and there's some very fun writing. And he did his best, as you can hear in his read right there, to completely and totally take it over the top, over the moon, and make it just completely Jim Carrey centric, which I don't think he had any other choice, especially back then. He didn't know, he had no other gears. Not that he has a bunch now, but it was just so Jim Carrey centric.
Right.
Kind of like George Clooney when he's in a Coen Brothers movie. Like you don't remember the Coen Brothers characters as much as you remember George Clooney mugging for the camera. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Which some people love. But for me, this movie was clever enough, fun enough that it transcended Jim Carrey, even though he did his best to, I think, make it absolutely Jim Carrey and all Jim Carrey. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do. Jim Carrey did the Jim Carrey thing, but it was perfectly warranted. This is a high concept.
I'm saying that he was still over the top. Maybe too much so, but I think that the movie was fun enough and it worked well enough that it survived that for me. Like, I got so...
This is a fun, enjoyable movie. I have no problem with this. It's lightweight, don't get me wrong, but enjoy.
Even his read right there. It's just like somebody just needs to tell him to slow. It doesn't need all that.
Oh, you don't think so?
It didn't need that kind of cadence, like where he's saying it all, and what he's doing is he's trying to say everything that he did wrong in one breath so that at the end he's like, out of breath, and he's like,
slow speeding.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do that. Like if he just said everything and tried to, like, while he was trying to hold it in, you know, it would have been just as effective. But he does that Jim Carrey, like, I'm zany.
I see what you're saying.
And it takes away from a lot of
it. It's hard to imagine someone else doing it now.
Nick Cage could do almost any Jim Carrey role effectively back in the day. I think he's the only actor I can think of that I know of that could fill in for Jim Carrey on almost every single one of his roles.
Interesting.
Yeah, Nick Cage. Pull it off.
Number three for me.
Speaking of trying to make things Nick Cage centric, you know, he would do that.
Number three.
They were best friends back then, too.
I know. They were in Peggy Sue Got Married together. He was one of his buddies at the reunion.
At the little picnic table there, the little dinner table, the little lunch table.
number three for me. This involves a spoiler. So if you have not seen, or you should have seen it, by the way, but if you have not seen Get Out, I would hit tap that fast forward button a few times, right, because the fact that there is a traffic stop is not that big of a deal in the movie Get Out from earlier this year.
It's early in the movie, though, right?
It is very early in the movie, but I'm going to explain why it's such a brilliant scene and
which ties into the
revelation that came to me. So there is a traffic stop.
People probably already pushed fast forward, so it'd be nice to give them a heads up how long.
You can stick with me for a couple seconds. I'll give you the. This is where you got to hit that button. There's a traffic. So what happens is the premise of the film is Chris and Rose, black Chris and white Rose, are going to they're dating in New York, and they're driving upstate New York to meet her parents. This is the first time they're going to meet her parents, and they're obviously a little bit nervous. You know, bring home black guy, all that stuff. It's a social thriller.
Guess who's coming to dinner?
Indeed, it's Chris and Rose. And they hit a deer. A deer jumps out. They're in upstate New York at this point, so they're kind of on an isolated road a little bit. And the car hits a deer. And they kill the deer. And smash cut to, the next scene is the cop on the side of the road investigating. He's taking notes, and, you know, there's been an accident, blah, blah, blah. You can fast forward here more or less if you want to for about the next minute and a half.
Great. I think most people are just coming back in right about now.
Fast forward out.
I'm picturing someone just like finally they hit it four times and it stops and they just hear you saying, I'm going to wax.
I'm about to wax for a little bit. Anyway, so
Can I push fast forward? Is there a button for me?
How dare you? The cop says, let me see your license and registration, please, says to Chris, the black kid. And Rose stands up. She has this moment. She's like, no, put your license and registration away. You don't have to show him your license. He doesn't have to show. He hasn't done anything wrong. He hasn't committed a crime. Why are you harassing him? And he's like, well, I just want to, blah, blah. No, you're not going to. And she has this kind of virtue signaling, save the cat moment, right? Or she's like the good guy. And you're like, wow, that's, she obviously feels very strongly about racial profiling, and she's hearing it for her boyfriend, and it's this great moment, or character defining moment anyway.
A little uncomfortable.
A little uncomfortable, but she stands up, and the officer was kind of meek.
She does what Trump didn't do in Charlottesville.
That's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just trying to make it political.
Okay.
Trying to make it interesting.
So, thank you. So, cop gets, without looking at the ID, the cop gets in the car, drives away, says, be safe, and they get back in the car, and they drive to the parents' house. Only after the events of the film take place did I realize, like, I'm like, that was such a random scene. The scene where, like, it didn't add up to anything. The cop never came back in the story. The deer meant nothing. It was just kind of a nothing scene. And I was like, no, that's brilliant. She didn't want the cop to run his ID, because then there would be, like, his last known, like, you know, presence was driving to their parents' house. Like, he has to disappear. So if the cop, like, records where
he
was.
Right, it's understood. Right.
Yeah, so it's a brilliant scene that you only realize, like, this is,
brilliant. It's clever.
It's clever.
When you go back and
subtle.
Think about it from before, because it was an odd scene. It didn't play out like a normal scene, especially when he's just kind of staring at the deer and, like, it's
and
just that, like, long shot where it's kind of pushing it on the
And you're like, that's
woods.
For sure coming back, right?
Yeah.
That's for sure coming back. Oh,
I mean,
no.
He was drawing attention to it, but for not the reasons that you thought, or you weren't sure why, but.
When I say brilliant, what I mean is on TV Tropes.
It's not that brilliant.
On the website TV Tropes, they have a whole section called Fridge Brilliance, which is you don't realize what happened or how brilliant the scene was until you get up and walk to the fridge for milk later on. You're like, oh,
what?
Yeah.
What?
So this is a great example of fridge brilliance where only later did I realize, oh, of course, that's why she did that. So great scene, traffic stop, Get Out. Number three for you.
Okay. The actual device that you're just speaking of is not that brilliant. It's ballsy to have something in there that's kind of nonsensical or doesn't really make sense till the end. That is clever, but the actual
device.
But it's
never explained
actually,
at all. Like you only if you understand it, you come to realize.
If you remember it,
right?
If you just remember it all clicks together.
Yeah, I agree.
So, but
I like that.
I love that too. It's
you
not,
should
not
like
spoon feeding.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You should love when it's not.
But
you're
making it seem like the actual device and what actually happened in there was like the genius part, and it wasn't really that genius. It was good. Number three for me. Now, okay, this comes on a lot of lists, and it might be high time that you ban this film from my vocabulary,
you're
my
banned.
Lexicon here.
You're
but this is the sign of a great, great movie when
brilliant.
Little fun things and topics that we come up with like this. And I think, oh, that happened in that movie that I talk about all the time. And, oh, yeah, it fucking works, and it's great. True Romance. I'm talking about Balky,
who's the
assistant, and he's
this.
driving the Porsche over there, and he's getting a little cover your ears, ladies. Roadhead, Brian. Not to be confused
that's
with the Harry
that's,
Man's
that's
movie.
That's a great reveal, though.
That's Road Hard.
That's right.
No, I'm talking about Roadhead. which is what he's receiving, and from the strumpet, Brian. She's a strumpet.
She's a trollop.
She's a trollop, and then they get pulled over because he's speeding on the PCH or whatever, and it's Cousin Balky, of course.
Bronson Pinchot.
Yeah. And cop pulls him over, and he has a big bag of coke, like a Ziploc bag.
And he's trying to get her to put it in her panties
over there, or bra.
Put in your bra.
And she's like, I'm not doing any of that for you. And it's a little ridiculous. It's like, just put it anywhere other than out in the open, Balky. Just put it somewhere. Yeah.
Put it in the
even if she's
box.
Not going to keister it for you over there, you know, find something. And it's a little bit, you know, back and forth, a little bit slapsticky almost. And then she tells him to fuck himself or something and hits him. And thus the bag smashes against his face, coke everywhere, right when the cop walks up. And she starts cackling like a maniac, even though they're both probably going to go to jail. Yeah. But that was a very fun scene.
He's probably in a little bit more trouble being the driver and covered in coke, literally covered
in cocaine. And he's Cousin Balky, right?
And he's also Cousin Balky.
1993, Tony Scott directed True Romance. And I know True Romance finds its way on multiple lists, but it does so many little things right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we come up with these arbitrary lists and arbitrary topics week in, week out. And I think that's a sign of a really great movie. It's like, oh, well, there is a little pullover, traffic stop scene. True Romance, and it's actually really good. It deserves to be on the list.
I The Godfather is one for me that I can think of for almost every list, it feels like. And there's a traffic stop. Would you consider the scene where Sonny Corleone stops at the booth and he meets an unfortunate fate?
That's a
traffic stop?
Not a traffic stop, Brian, because that's a pay.
He stopped at a toll booth.
Very different.
Well, he is in traffic, and he stops.
Stop. Look at your smug smile right now. You're like, did I get it? Does that work?
Does that count? Is that
good? Like the smile that crawled across his face. Like, yeah, I see what I just did there. No, because if that was the case, falling down would be in my number one, hands down. Huh. He stops in traffic, gets out of the car, and starts walking on a rampage.
That's right.
Number one.
Yeah. He stopped himself.
What?
He stopped himself.
Yeah, he stopped in traffic. I mean, for what you're talking about. Uh-huh. All right, let's take a break.
Coming up next, we'll do the number two and number one traffic stops of all time. Andrew, I'm going to blow your mind. Blue Apron, five-year anniversary.
5 year, I read
this
that.
This October.
How is that possible? It's been
around
for 5 years.
They've been with us since the beginning. Since the beginning of their company, they've been with us for 5 years.
Have they been with us for 5 years?
Feels like it. Close to it, anyway. I for sure was doing Blue Apron 5 years ago.
Love, love, love the Blue Apron. We've been talking about how much we love Blue Apron. I almost find myself talking about Blue Apron even when they don't have a spot on the show. It just comes up. True story. This is an absolute true story. Didn't even realize we were doing a Blue Apron read today. Really happened. I'm standing there with my sick boy at the window trying to get him not to cry anymore, have him looking out my front window. A UPS truck, or actually it was a U-Haul truck, which is kind of weird, but a U-Haul truck pops up. Guy gets out the back. He pulls out a Blue Apron box. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I ordered it. Here it comes. They take it to my neighbor's house. Deeply disappointed.
It's
deeply
probably better
disappointed.
That yours didn't come off a U-Haul truck, though.
They deliver them any way they can.
Speaking of which, check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TFV. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/TFV. Blue Apron.
A better way to cook.
That's what I was going to say.
Ryan.
I know. Welcome back. Time to count down top two traffic stops. You want me to go first?
I wish you would.
A movie that doesn't get talked about very much on this show, despite it being an Oscar-nominated film.
True Romance,
Oscar-nominated film. True Romance not nominated for any Oscars.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a movie that doesn't get mentioned much on the show.
Okay, right. Talk about The Cooler from 2003. The Cooler. You saw The Cooler, right? Mm-hmm. Did you see The Cooler?
Yeah, absolutely. Funny story. Back when
sounds
I was
fishy.
In film school.
Sounds fishy.
Back when I was film school, Long Beach, living in Long Beach, my local 7-Eleven, which if you're a degenerate like me, you always have a local 7-Eleven. You get to know the guys that work at the 7-Eleven. And it was this big guy. I believe his name was Steve. And I hope this doesn't sound racist. It's not meant to come off as racist. It's just fact. But as far back as I can remember, he's the only white guy that I knew that worked at 7-Eleven that I frequented, that I became friends with. Because I know most of my 7-Eleven guys,
fact.
And I say hi to him. And he was a big white guy, and we loved talking movies. And Go in there all the time, you know, buy the smokes and the beers and whatever else I needed. You know, I was right down the street, 24 hours. Anyway, Steve kept going on and on because he knew I was in film school. We talked about movies. I used to recommend movies to him. I come in like, you know, a couple days later. So, did you watch that? And he'd be like, oh, it was fantastic. Thanks. Like that kind of thing. Or like, why the fuck would you have me watch that? It was great. It was a really nice rapport we had, which you don't get out of
it. Back when you did the film vault as a grassroots thing. You're like, you talked to one guy.
It was right before that.
Essentially, you did flick fashions for one guy.
No, because I talked to all my film student nerd
friends. I know. There's a constant stranger.
But it was a stranger, yes. Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
My apologies.
I worked you from defaulting to no to coming.
My apologies. You're right. In that respect, I was doing a film vault essentially for one Steve, let's call him. So anyways, he kept telling me about his buddy who's a screenwriter who had this movie that he was writing called The Cooler, and he kept going on and on about it. And then he was like, all through, like, you know, when I was at film school, and he's like, The Cooler actually is getting a lot of people are reading it and they're starting to look into it and they're starting to like it. And then he's like, William H. Macy is rumored to be actually being in it now. Like, all like, I was getting this firsthand knowledge from this guy that works at 7-Eleven. And then it came out and it was really uncomfortable when he's like, so what'd you think? I'm like, it was okay.
Yeah.
I didn't love
The Cooler. Didn't love The
Cooler? No.
All right.
Very soft.
I like The Cooler. It is in fact, William H. Macy. He plays Bernie Lutz. Bernie Lutz is a great name.
I didn't dislike. It just didn't have like an edge for me. You know what I mean?
Really?
It didn't have a hook. It just kind of felt like made for USA. USA, you know, the USA Network?
Yeah, I'm with you. I know what you mean.
You know USA Network?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
USA, it's still a network?
Yeah.
It's a weird network, right?
It is a weird network.
USA, you think in Russia they got one called CCP? CCCP?
Yeah, but they certainly do have government-run networks, for sure.
USA.
What's funny is all the networks now that run like trashy like reality shows, like they're all networks.
Bravo.
Like... Yeah, Bravo, or like any Arts and Entertainment, or TLC, the Learning Channel.
Yeah, yeah.
They're running like Honey Boo Boo.
Right. Yeah, you learn.
Yeah, you learn.
What
That's
not
true.
To do. Yeah.
The Cooler has a great scene at the very end, and this will be a spoiler, so you will want to fast forward if you haven't seen The Cooler. I'll tell you when. But first, Bernie...
She was up, right, for Best Supporting Actress?
You're talking about Maria Bello?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. I don't think so, but I do know for a fact that Alec Baldwin was nominated for supporting actor.
Okay, what is
and
that?
And that was his big comeback. Like, he was, you know, just sort of languishing, not doing much, and he comes out with this and is a huge comeback.
State and Maine was right around then. He was great in that.
He was. We didn't get a lot of it, you know, individual attention.
So that just happened.
So William H. Macy plays Bernie Lutz, and Bernie Lutz is a cooler. He's a professional cooler. Like, he's employed by an old school Vegas casino to walk around and spread his epically bad luck on the other gamblers. Like, if there's a table that's getting hot, call Bernie. And Bernie just goes out and he hangs out. The table goes cold. And he'll walk up to the blackjack player who's winning too much. And he'll just go like, hey, how's it going, buddy? And next thing you know, the blackjack player just gets cold streak.
Because this guy's just got that cold aura. He's got that bad juju.
Bad luck. He's imagine William H. Macy, peak William H. Macy. Like, he's just got that hangdog look, and he's just a sad sack, and he's...
I think that's... I'm picturing, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's schlubby character in
Boogie Nights?
Boogie Nights. Would I think have worked better for me?
See, that's essentially owning Mahoney.
Yeah, it is owning Mahoney. Yeah. Good pull right there. It is owning Mahoney was so sad and hard to watch.
That was
as well.
That's a bleak film too.
But
it's just not fun.
Yeah, something about William H. Macy. I just think it's like the Ned Flanders type character that he is in this movie.
But that's
you know?
He's a perfect.
I wish he was a little bit more.
He's sheepish.
I wish there was more behind his character.
Okay, well, his character does come out of the shell a little bit because he falls in love with Maria Bello, and his luck starts to turn around. As luck would have it, he completely turns around, and he starts to like be bad at his job. Like, he'll walk by a table, and all of a sudden they'll roll like an 11, and everyone wins. You know, like everyone will 21
because he's in love, and his aura is glowing.
He's completely turned around, and he loses his job as the cooler. And things happen.
Alec Baldwin,
but anyway,
very upset.
You can start fast forwarding now if you haven't seen The Cooler. Hopefully, I've sold it to you and you want to see it because I like The Cooler.
Tell people I can stop fast forwarding though?
No, so you can start fast forwarding now because now I'm actually going to get into the end of the film.
Well,
the traffic stop.
I mean, that was quite a. How far along when his luck turns around? Isn't that kind of halfway through the movie?
Yeah, about halfway through. But at the end, at the end of the film, he and his woman, Mirabella, go on a great hot streak. They take the casino for what feels like $500,000 or something like that. They go on an epic hot streak, and they make off with the money. Legitimately, they didn't steal it. Like, they won it at the blackjack or at the craps tables. And they're off with it, but the casino boss is not having it. And all of a sudden, as they're making their way across the highway, in the middle of the night, cop pulls them over. And he's like, oh, sorry, I was speeding, officer. We just won a whole bunch of money, and we're really excited. And the cop pulls his gun. He's like, get out of the car. It's a crooked cop. And the cop gets them on their knees, like, you know, execution style. And he cocks the gun, and he's like, you think you're going to get away with the money?
and like this is it. Bernie's luck has finally run out.
Returned.
We know it had to go back.
Return to the
meeting. The cop gets them dead to rights, the gun right at the back of their head. They're on their knees next to each other. And all of a sudden, a car comes out of nowhere, takes out the cop, kills him, crashes on the side of the road.
It's one of those scenes where like you don't hear the car coming at all.
It's just out of nowhere. And William H. Macy like goes over to look, and he pulls out like a beer can. He's like, "It's a drunk driver. It's just a crazy drunk driver. He killed the cop." Right. And the scene ends, and they make their way off, and they live happily ever after. And I remember initially being so upset, like, why did they go with the Deus Ex Machina? How did they get themselves out of the situation? Just like an act of God, a crazy drunk driver just took out the cop, and all is well. But then I realized, oh no, this is his luck finally. The guy who's been the victim of terrible luck his whole life, has defined his life and his career and everything he knows by bad luck. Finally, he's the beneficiary of good luck.
He already was, though, before that as well.
Right, but I mean, like in a life-altering moment. In a life-altering moment.
Continues to land on red.
Right.
Or black.
If you bet on, yeah.
Always bet on black.
Always bet on black. Don't play roulette. That's the real lesson. The Cooler, 2003. I like The Cooler. I'm surprised you didn't like it that much.
It was okay. It felt like Ned Flanders wanted to run a casino.
That's what it was.
I know. Why would you want to watch that? Why would you love that?
No, that's
it was okay.
I liked Ron Livingston's character as the up-and-coming younger casino manager.
Speaking of casino, my mom stayed over a couple nights ago, and she always watches, you know, whatever's on. Right. She still surfs. She's easy. And, no, Brian.
Trust me.
It's not Brian. And she's got Casino on, you know, which I've seen one time in the theater. Maybe, you know, and I've seen chunks of it like this here and there.
Casino?
Yeah. I don't love Casino.
No, I've seen it many times.
No, it's
all my.
It's watered down Goodfellas. You know, I'd much rather watch Goodfellas like
throwaway lines
20th time than see Casinos again. Casino again, and you know, it's really great filmmaking, but it's the victim.
It came on the heels of Goodfellas.
Yeah, and it's Scorsese doing, you know, hyper extended Scorsese again, and my biggest problem there was De Niro's character is just kind of a bitch.
Yeah, Ace Rothstein is no Jimmy Conway.
Yeah, you got to go, and that's what I'm afraid of with the. With the old Phantom Thread over there. I'm afraid that it's going to be a very similar situation with Daniel Day-Lewis. His follow-up to...
it was follow-up, unfortunately, to... Daniel Day-Lewis. Lincoln.
No, his follow-up. We're talking Paul Thomas Anderson. Why am I drawing a fucking
Daniel Lincoln? Plainview.
Daniel Plainview. I was thinking like why initials.
Don't I own this?
Why don't I... Daniel Plainview. Oh, that's...
Wow.
Sacrilegious. That'd be like a Christian going to church going... Dear Lord, and what's his name? George?
JC,
Dear Lord,
yeah.
George Christ.
Jason.
Jerry Christ? Jerry? Oh my God, I just forgot Jesus' name. I'm not suggesting that Daniel Plainview is my Jesus, but.
He's much better.
If I got to pick one, got to pick somebody. You know what I'm saying? All right, number two for me.
Number two.
1984, Brian, a little movie came out that you've never seen, and I should watch it, make you watch it, but I hate the idea of a straight-laced guy like yourself coming in and not understanding Repo Man and kind of just going, I don't really like that.
Good things.
But Repo Man, I believe it's like the open of the film almost. An older gentleman driving around parts that look not unlike Joshua Tree, and an old, I'm not a car guy, but it looks like an old Ford, maybe like... Thunderbird. I don't know what the fuck it is. It's an old car.
T-Bird.
Maybe a T-Bird. Maybe a Falcon. Might be a Falcon.
Pontiac Firebird.
Anyways, cop pulls him over and says, what's going on here? I almost got the sound, but it just didn't really work for the sound. And he says, what do you got in the trunk? And the guy says, you don't want to see what's in the trunk.
You don't want to see.
And the cop says, give me the keys. Because it's that old. It's back in the day where like you're going to pop the trunk or you have to actually take the keys out of the ignition, hand them to the cop, Brian. CHP with his big knee-high boots, like Poncherella. John Larry Wilcox.
It's another TV reference. This is thick with TV references.
Goes back to the trunk, pops it, and in very cheesy, low-rent, low-budget 1984 filmmaking, the cop freezes. You see his skeleton, like an X-ray version of it, and brights up
that's
red.
That's good.
And then, because just this bright, bright light comes out of the trunk,
right.
And then... he's just like, and the guy sitting in the car, kind of watching the side view mirror, and then he just drives away, and camera pulls back. This is like the opening of the film. Camera pulls back, nothing but two knee high boots standing there with smoke coming out of
vaporized
them. Just totally eviscerated, and that's the opening of Repo Man, and then we get to watch Emilio Estevez become a Repo Man. Thanks, due in large part, actually solely to Harry Dean Stanton's character, who kind of cons him into it, Brian. It's a really fun punk rock anti-establishment movie made by Alex Cox, the same guy that did Sid and Nancy. And not for everybody, but I really do enjoy that. Just for the soundtrack alone, if you enjoy your punk rock like I do, there you go. Repo Man, 1984, fantastic, very memorable. Traffic Stop.
Mm. Number one for me. No crossover, by the way.
I like that.
No crossover. Turns out this was fruitful.
I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name who was driving that, and I feel like I should know his name. God damn it. God, gee damn it.
Repo Man?
Yeah.
Emilio Estevez?
Nope.
Harry Dean Stanton?
No.
I'm out of ideas.
It was like something Hill or...
George Roy Hill.
No, he's a great director.
Jim Hill, the sports anchor.
Go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
Number one for me. It's iconic.
Edmund Kemper.
I expect it to be on the listener list. It was one of the first ones to come to mind. And I watched the scene in research for this, and I couldn't leave it off. I had to put it number one. It's so great. Fargo, Coen Brothers, Fargo, 1986.
That was a last minute
Scratch.
Really?
It's a great scene. As with many Coen Brothers movies, a routine traffic stop spirals out of control. Not traffic spot specifically in their movies, but like something routine sort of spirals out of control. The bumbling mastermind, in this case, Steve Buscemi, he fails at a bribe attempt, and the loose cannon character, Peter Stormare, takes things into his own hands. Situation escalates. Anderson, when two innocent passerby, remember they witness the attempted cover-up, and all hell breaks loose. And they got to be taken care of.
They do have to be taken care of, yes.
Uh-huh. It's a great scene. Really set the tone for the movie. Because the kidnapping had already happened at this point. And with Coen Brothers...
Sorry. I wasn't listening to you just now. Are you... Which... I was...
Okay, you're really Stromer? Listening? What? Okay, you want to start over?
No, for the listener's sake, God no, do I want you to start over. But are you talking about... With Buscemi and Stormare?
Yes, I'm talking about the scene where the routine traffic stop in the middle of the night goes out of control, and Steve Buscemi is the master.
Yes,
and tries to bribe him, but then the guy's like...
With the 50
like,
sticking out. Yes, car, yes, yeah. Yes.
And then Stromare like takes the things into his own hands.
Pretty quickly.
And then passerby drive by, and they kind of like... They're rubbernecking,
but they
got to be taken care
of.
Yes,
yes. And it kind of leads to... It's a very small little story.
It very much is. And I think people forget, now that we have, in the rearview mirror, we have No Country for Old Men, we have Fargo. I feel like the violence in Fargo was unusually high for Coen Brothers movie.
For sure.
Like, because they were
so was Miller's Crossing.
Right, but they were like, you know, Raising Arizona and Hudsucker Proxy.
Well, no, those are comedies. I mean, they make noirs or they make comedies. And
right,
they rarely... I wish they would mix the two a little
Barton
more often.
Barton Fink and all that stuff. Like this is an especially violent movie for them, and this is an especially violent scene. And this set the tone early because this comes after the kidnapping, but I don't think anyone had actually been killed or really harmed. Remember, the kidnapping is kind of a silly scene where like the woman's in the shower and she comes out with the shower curtain and she kind of wraps herself up and like knocks herself out. Like, it's silly Coen Brothers stuff.
Well, Fargo, the whole backdrop of Fargo was kind of silly, just making fun of dumb people. That's another reason why I didn't really like it. I felt like it was just making, kind of poking fun. It felt like Hollywood Elite poking fun at the simpletons, which Coen Brothers are great at doing if they're going for the full comedy. But when they're trying to bring it kind of a serious tone or a violent tone to it, it feels like it's patronizing almost.
I agree, but they can't help themselves. Like, remember, you mentioned earlier Garrett Dillahunt. Do you remember the Garrett Dillahunt character in No Country for Old Men, like as the bumbling sidekick, as like the sheriff's, the deputy? And like every time he's like, "Gee, you think so, Sheriff?"
Yeah.
And Tommy Jones is like, "Well, I think we got ourselves here, homicide." "Gee, you think so, Sheriff?" Like he's very silly, and you can't help but think like, "All right, well, this is kind of an overdone trope, the confused Southerner, the overly confused, easily duped Southerner."
Right.
Anyway, it just feels like along the lines of the Northerner.
You know where
Fargo.
That works really well, and I'm okay with it, is Nebraska, and I think it's because Alexander Payne. Is from Nebraska.
He has some authority or some authenticity to it.
Authenticity and license because he's from there, right? So
interesting. Both of those are great movies.
I don't even know where the Coen Brothers are from. Shrouded in mystery, those brothers.
Probably New York Jews.
Brian.
Let's look it up.
Can we find out where the Coen Brothers are from? Thank you, Logan. Logan looks like he's at the wrong end of a long day.
Logan got up early to do a...
Ass end of a long, long
CNET
day.
CNET shoot. Don't worry, Logan. Only one more episode after this.
All righty here.
All right, number one for you.
Coen Brothers from New York. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's where they reside. St. Louis.
Oh,
they're allowed. Totally allowed. Totally. Midwest license. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, make fun. I can't. You can. Oh, they got the full gamut.
St. Louis is
make
more
fun of Midwesterners
Saint,
and
sorry,
Jews.
That's St. Louis Park, Minnesota.
Oh,
fucking bastards.
Even better, actually.
Son of a whore.
Minnesota is more Fargo than St. Louis is.
No, we're just talking about Fargo, though. I'm talking about like down south, and they make fun of all sorts of characters throughout all of their films.
Okay.
Look, speaking of which, I'm getting a call from Nashville.
Nashville?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Let me answer this
Music
real quick.
City.
Can I answer this and yell at them? Because I get bullshit calls all the time. Hello? Hello?
Hello, can Ms. Cohen, please?
Yeah, you have the wrong number. Thank you.
What? Cohen.
I know. But still, they wanted like me to refi my home. I'm a renter. Okay.
What if you did go through a refi on the house you're in? You signed the papers.
Number one for me. Brian, have you seen this movie that you've been alluding to all episode
What film
long?
Is that?
1992, Abel Ferrara directed.
You assigned it to me.
Bad Lieutenant?
Yes, you did.
Not Port of Call.
No, both. You assigned both. Individually.
I assigned both.
Individually.
I'm pretty tight.
You're pretty tight.
I made you do that? That's pretty sweet.
I would absolutely rather watch this again than I'd rather watch Winter's Bone.
Really?
Winter's Bone is bleak. And
I would much rather go back and watch Winter's Bone.
Really?
No, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say much rather. I think I would just because I want to see Jennifer Lawrence now, what I know of her, and she's so much.
You're right. And John Hawks. And,
yeah, I think I would.
But Bad Lieutenant is, it's a hard watch.
It's such
and
a dirty
it's unpleasant.
Movie.
Yeah, but it's at
so
least,
filthy.
At least things are happening on the screen.
Yeah, they're slow paced, though.
I'm not saying one's a slam dunk, but I'm just saying, give me the choice. I'll choose Bad Lieutenant.
Abel Ferrara is a fantastic filmmaker. Really, really dirty. I used to say that he's like Scorsese's dirty stepbrother, right?
I do not know who she is.
That was Werner Herzog talking when he was when he remade Bad Lieutenant Port of Calls. But he's like, no, it has nothing to do with Abel. Actually, no, that was completely. Never mind.
Oh,
that was him talking about Danny Boyle at the. When I went and saw him.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And it doesn't matter. Okay. We're talking in circles here. I think a lot of our listeners.
Let's talk about Bad Lieutenant because I only left it off the list because I was 100% sure it'd be on your list.
Bad Lieutenant is the story of just that, a bad New York dirty cop played so perfectly by Harvey Keitel, like only Harvey Keitel could do, because he's got that look of intensity and everything must happen now or never. Like he looks like he's always on the verge.
I did watch this scene. Shut up, you fuck. Shut up. Hey.
I love Keitel as like a secondary character. Yeah. It's hard for me to take him as carrying the entire movie,
sure.
Which is what he does with Bad Lieutenant. Abel Ferrara is a gritty, gritty director. Who has a little bit of cinema verite. We started off by talking about that with Florida Project, where you kind of feel like, it's you're on the streets a little bit, and it's one of these movies where you feel like you got to take a shower. He's constantly gambling on baseball and life. He's got bookies, and he's a plainclothes cop, and he's constantly doing drugs and just, running amok in New York. And
he's taking many liberties with his position.
One scene in particular where he's just completely strung out and he's at the end of his rope, and he pulls over these two younger ladies who were coming from a club. They look, it's a different time, 1992, so they got a real 80s look to them.
Speaking of a different time, let me just set this up by saying Christy often asked, what's your list this week? And I'm like, oh, Traffic Stops. He's like, what's on your list? And I'm like, a couple films you haven't heard of. But he's like, well, try me. I'm like, there's one scene from a film called Bad Lieutenant that, let's just say, it takes place before there were police body cams.
Yes.
No body cameras on this cop.
Well, that's a brand new thing. Body cams,
right,
couple years old,
right? This scene would not exist.
Turn them off pretty
this
easily.
Scene would not exist today.
He's a plainclothes cop, too.
I know, but
so he pulls over
he does
these
things
two,
it would not be
these two, these two ladies. I'm sorry, I'm not thinking of the one name of the actors. Not important.
I didn't recognize that.
One of them I've seen her in other films.
Yeah.
And they didn't really do anything wrong, but he uses his power to his own his own gratification at that
doesn't
moment.
He get it for like a bullshit? Like he's like, I'm gonna haul you in for like a broken taillight or something.
Yeah, some bullshit. And he's he essentially whips out his pecker there and makes the one in the passenger seat show him her ass.
Show me your ass.
And then you ever suck cock before? Have you? It runs. It's not a tight scene by
any.
It feels very real and very awkward and back and forth. And show me how you'd suck a cock. And he's just beaten off there on the side of the
road.
He
masturbates furiously.
So debased.
Next to the car.
If I know what I think I know about Abel Ferrara and Harvey Keitel, I would not be shocked if he actually did beat off to completion on the side of that road. And it's just so uncomfortable. And I thought about bringing in some audio for this here episode, and I figured, you know what? You guys don't need to hear
You suffered enough.
It's not like F me hard enter where it's kind of like funny because it's so over the top. It's just dirty. It's just gross.
Yeah, I felt bad for the girls.
I felt really bad for the girls.
What about the actresses?
And then, you know, it only gets worse from there. I mean, by the time it's all over, he's in George Christ's temple, you know, new as a jaybird, imitating George there on the with his arms out to the sides. Is it really offensive to religious people?
Call him George Christ?
Call him George instead of Jesus.
You know, I think it's more inferior when you call it George Christ's temple.
I think he's a Jew.
Who, Christel?
Christ.
Oh, yeah, but okay.
Jesus, he's a Jew. He could have a temple.
The houses of worship are not known as temples.
Temples are pretty loose.
No, it's a Jewish temple.
No, you got temples. There's all sorts of different type of temples. It's a place of worship, right?
Lowercase t.
All right, he's in the church, all right? And he's naked as can be. Giant hog on that Harvey Keitel. Massive.
You can tell he was quite comfortable taking his clothes off.
Yeah. Like his penis is to his penis what Adrian Brody's nose is to his face. You know what I mean?
Overwhelming.
Oh,
defining.
Honking. Large.
Impossible to ignore.
Everyone in Hollywood knows what Harvey's peen looks like. Oh, not that Harvey. And
right.
So that's my number one, just because it sticks out. It's immediately the first traffic stop I thought of. Just absolute debased human behavior.
Simply based on
power, drunk with power.
Simply based on the number of people in
strung out on drugs
who saw this movie in 1992. Who do you think more people in Hollywood have seen Harvey Keitel's penis or Harvey Weinstein's penis?
Keitel's by far, really? In a way. Yes, Brian. Some stories. Brian, come on. Let's not get ridiculous.
Let's hear the listener top five.
Dozens and dozens of people in theaters, like hour after hour.
No, how many people in Hollywood? How many execs? I'm not talking about executives.
Yeah, I'm
talking about people who've like people actually worked actors,
like today,
actresses.
Like today, the last 10 years, probably more people have seen. That's a good question. Like, last 10 years, A lot of them are younger.
Of course, a million people have seen Bad Lieutenant. I'm talking about just people who work in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I probably within the last 10 years, so many new people that work in Hollywood that have had to see his little peen. Probably more people have seen Weinstein's, peen. Yep. Yeah.
Think about that.
Oh, Harvey.
All right, if you've seen Weinstein's penis, please text, tweet us. In the meantime, let's hear the listener top five.
Number five.
That was hacky, Brian.
Cheech and Chong's
like
Up
to,
in
I'd
Smoke.
I'd like to be tweeted.
That was a good scene. Yeah, I forgot all about it. Yeah, I was going to say I'm very excited to hear the listeners. There is no good list like on online.
There is now. It's ours.
Yeah, there is.
Number four, Liar, Liar.
Mm.
Number three.
That's a movie with Jim Carrey.
Bad Lieutenant.
What is that? Which one?
The Harvey Keitel one.
That makes sense.
Number two, Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, we'd mix and drink
nope.
And pee.
Nope.
And the number
making
one,
fundamental challenge people.
It has two different scenes. I think each of them would have made number one on their own because they were mentioned enough times, and it's far and away number one. And that is Super Troopers.
I didn't see what other people saw in Super Troopers.
I didn't see Super Troopers.
Oh,
what?
There you go.
Really?
I don't think so.
Well, Logan's got a new movie for his list.
Logan's like really pumped.
I know. I get excited when I have one locked and loaded
actually,
for you.
Logan,
did I see it? I might have seen it. Like, it has something to do with lizards or something? Is it lizards?
That's the production company's Broken Lizard.
Yeah, see, I know that much.
There's no lizards in the film.
I don't need to see this, do I? Isn't
Logan,
it kind of like Red Hot American Summer
I'll be honest,
style?
I don't think I've ever seen the whole thing either. If you ever need to sign
it,
right. Film.
Are there some naked boobs in there? You look like you're looking at, you got ulterior motives there.
It's
no, I simply haven't seen the entire film.
Although, to be honest, I don't know if Anderson's going to like it. It's very immature.
Uh-huh.
A lot of stoner humor.
I don't think this is my kind of movie.
I don't think it is either. But yeah. I'm still going to make you watch it eventually.
Isn't it like kind of like Red Hot American Summer? Isn't it kind of?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Not so as smart.
As smart as Red Hot? Oh no.
Possibly not, but also
possibly not.
You guys might not know this about me, but I need my comedies like witty and sharp,
dry.
But also, yes. It's not as silly as Red Hot American.
Like, I like to be the only one laughing in the theater.
Oh. It's silly for sure.
The only one laughing in the theater. Like, if other people are laughing, it's a joke beneath me.
I remember a lot of stoner comedy.
I'm out. But I like Half Baked.
Actually, but it's probably the opening scene has probably one of the best stoner scenes ever.
Do I have to be high to enjoy it?
No.
Okay. Because that's impossible. I can't enjoy it.
Drunk might help. There's more drunk humor in it than there is stoner humor.
Can't pull over anymore.
Can't do it.
So close, so very close, Anderson. But the one I bumped off, you would have not liked this. But there's a great scene in an otherwise forgettable film, Wayne's World 2, where Wayne gets pulled over and the cop comes up and he's like, "Yes, officer, can I help you?" And the guy leans down. It turns out to be Robert Patrick dressed as the T-1000.
So stupid.
Have you seen this boy?
Ah! It's a referential. I get it. I wasn't expecting
it's
that.
Not self-referential at all. It's actually from a different film.
Not self-referential. What I meant was it's timely. What's it called?
Topical
humor. Yeah.
For me, keep in mind, as a young boy,
self-referential.
Wayne's World and Terminator 2 coming together in one film.
Wiener probably got a little harder.
I probably got a little Keitel'd. Or Weinstein, as it were.
Brian, come on. Vacation's on my list.
Sure.
Very sad scene, actually, since becoming a dog lover.
Oh, that's right.
Not a very good scene.
Poor guy probably
kept
up as long as he could.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. The cop's performance was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Collateral has a great traffic stop scene in it, and the movie doesn't get talked about enough on this.
You know what? That would have been worthy. That could have been worthy. That would have been debated by myself, Brian. Damn it!
Sorry. Collateral's great.
Collateral's, that's the last good Michael Mann movie.
Wow, is that true? I'm trying to put the order in. But
I didn't see The Black Hat.
I didn't either. I don't think America did.
Mm. Bridesmaids has a funny... Yeah. What ruined it for me, though, that scene was just the overuse of music. And like, isn't this wacky and zany? It's like the second half of the music drops off, but the first half was just like trying to help it. It felt like a Fox TV show.
Yeah.
You know, but then she finally hits him, and it was kind of like reverse pullover, and she gets out. It was fun.
Blues Brothers, of course. Tommy Boy, the Bees. Don't Be a Menace. Training Day has a good one. Planes, Trains, Automobiles. That's it.
All right. I'm done.
Logan, let's game.
Oh, Winter's Bone also.
Winter's Bone.
Also ran for me.
That's right.
Last minute audition to the also
last
ran.
Subtraction.
Because Black Sheep.
Let's gamble on films. Bum, bum, bum.
All right. Last week you gambled on Geostorm. At the time, there was no Rotten Tomato score. Anderson bid 48
Eight.
And Brian 40.
What'd you bid?
8.
48.
I bet 40?
40.
40 and 8.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomato score for Geostorm is 11%.
Sweet! Winner! Okay, so... No, I said 48, and you thought I said 8 initially, which I should have just stuck with.
Oh, you said 48?
I did.
Oh, should I won? This is the part of the show where people hate where I don't have a film ready, because I really thought I lost. Damn it.
All right, well, this week, then...
Super Troopers.
You're going to be gambling on Suburbicon.
I know some stuff about that.
All right, well, then you're going to be gambling on... What was the other one that was coming out?
I mean, I don't know the score. I've been hearing things.
Yeah, what else is coming out?
I've been hearing things from people who actually make the score.
Jigsaw.
Oh, boy. Actually, this could go a lot of different ways. Bad or really bad?
Damn it.
So angry.
Yeah, Suburbicon, guys. If you had any hopes from the trailer.
Really?
I'm hearing really, really. What is the Suburbicon? Can you give it to me? I think if I had to guess, I'd guess like 52.
Yeah, right in the middle. Yeah, I probably would have said 50.
Because I'm hearing some real negative
shit. The Rotten Tomato score for Suburbicon is 38%.
Ooh, worse.
Not good.
Can we gamble on that?
I'm going to guess 38. 38. What are we gambling on?
We're gambling on a jigsaw. What number Saw movies? Is this like 6 or 7? This is really far down the list.
And then the next installment, when they reboot it again, like in 10 years, is being called Jig. Just Jig.
Jig.
There's 7 Saw movies, and then so this will be the 8th in the series.
So we need 7 of these, and then we need 7 Jig movies. And then what do they do? Okay.
Jigsaw. This is time for Halloween release, of course.
All right, let's fucking do this. Come on.
90.
Brian, you need to do 2 things. Get a number, just pull one out of a hat. And give me a movie to watch. These 2 things need to be done by you. Like
a film I don't think I've ever... a film. A number I never guessed. 47.
38.
Ooh, close.
38, which is the...
38 was the same score for Suburbicon.
All right, well, once again, there is no Rotten Tomato score
Beautiful.
For Jigsaw.
Because
there are 0 reviews.
Love
a good
that.
Sign. Not a good
Feeling
sign.
Good about that. Feeling real hopeful. Just, very optimistic. Feeling not like the cooler.
I got a film for it. Let me make sure it's this is the reason this sometimes takes a long time.
You just
is
have me watch something
I like
in the
to make sure that
what?
It's.
What? You just have me watch something in the theaters. How about that?
Oh, because you have your movie pass.
Because I like to have an excuse to get out of the house when the boy's down. The wife is watching Bravo.
Make sure you can.
Got to see a movie, Brian. Assign me a movie.
That's right. As you leave the house,
enjoy the Real Housewives or whatever.
Oh, hold on a second.
Snowman. God damn a snowman. It's just like, it's like you just feel like you feel your life just going away when you watch The Snowman. Like, it's a reminder. It's the worst movie I've seen in a long, long time, because nowadays you don't have to see bad movies. There's enough good movies out there, and you got enough information out there.
Damn it.
Knowledge that you can avoid the bad movies. You know what I mean? So this is the first really bad movie.
For God's sake.
First really bad movie, The Snowman, that I've seen in a long time. Mm. You ever see The Accountant?
No.
Okay, that's what I'm assigning you. Yeah, you
gotta
watch
I don't
the
think
Accountant.
That's how it works, actually. I'm pretty sure.
I was hoping I could like mind fuck you like Bugs Bunny.
I was like, oh,
no,
man.
But you. But I'm going to sign you. All right, let's go. Come on, Brian.
God, you owe me so many films. All right, you know what?
I owe you two movies, and I'm going to pay them
I've
all off.
Threatened.
You owe me one.
I know.
So that's three.
Fuck.
That's next week's Flickfessions.
You guys are like the IRS. You going to start garnishing my movie watching?
A film I threatened to make you watch a couple of weeks ago? Big Night. Have fun. God. Big Night's a great movie. I'm gonna lie.
What theater is this playing in?
It's playing in your home theater. Mm-hmm. Tell you that much. Thank all right, you, too. Great.
Why'd you assign me that?
Because I love that movie, and you either haven't seen it or you don't remember anything about it. I
remember not liking it. I remember my dad loving it, and I remember hating the last scene, which is him frying two eggs, and it was uncut. And I remember at the time being a punk rock kid going, what the fuck? Give me some edits here so we can get through with these goddamn eggs. I don't need to watch this man fry two eggs.
And you realize the beauty.
I don't know. I didn't realize it, but hopefully the adult, more mature and Andy over here is going
to
like it.
You have to revisit.
Can't wait to come back and hate it.
Thank you to Matt B. for the fan art this week. Thanks,
way
Matt.
Way to go, B.
Thanks. You can check it out. Oh, no.
That's pretty sweet. Post Cinemas Yucks. Post Tenebra Lux.
Levity after movies. That's good.
That's very clever, and it doesn't bastardize either one of our images.
No.
Which I appreciate.
Although, I think I am the bald man there. But either way.
It's not your image.
It's my likeness. Which, by the way, you don't have to pay me for. Check it out, AndersonandBrian.com. Thank you, Matt, for the art this week. If you want to send in your artwork or be a feature artist, AndersonandBrian.com is where you go. Feature artists this week include Take Today, Dead Cat Hat, Tarantula, Advocate, Fabrizio and the Fever, and Schultz. Thanks, you guys, for being a featured artist. Thank you. A big thank you to the a third of the way to 1,000 Patreons we have, 333 and counting. Means a lot to us, and enjoy this week's this month's bonus episode, Top 5 Spielberg
Spielies.
We doing that.
It's going to be fun doing that one because he is. I feel like I'm a little bit hard on him, and it'll be nice to celebrate him and actually talk about some of the memories.
Now you're talking.
You know, because
yeah,
childhood director and
our lives, our film going lives to a certain point in childhood certainly are defined by.
God,
Spielberg
I'd love
films.
To be able to do things that are just not realistic, which is just take Spielie out of the mix. Like Spielberg never existed. What does the movie culture look like? What do films look like? God knows. Maybe there's a slim chance, I think it's very slim, that I don't love movies.
Yeah,
I mean,
think about that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
you know what would probably be?
Into.
Richard Donner would probably be huge.
I was going to say, someone's got to take his place.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a vacuum, you know what I mean? Yeah.
That'll be out on Wednesday, by the way, if you haven't caught on yet.
Yeah,
Wednesday,
the first.
November 1st. Happy birthday, Mom. My mom's birthday, November
1st. Oh, very nice. Happy birthday, Mrs. Cohen.
Maybe. Cowan, you... Fuck.
So, click through our Amazon banner.
Should I get our Patreon for a birthday? Here you go, Mom. Patreon.
You absolutely should. 1 month free.
1 month free, Mom. There you go. Enjoy. Buy yourself some bubble gum.
The Amazon banner is up and working at AndersonandBrian.com right there at the top. Facebook, Twitter, The Film Vault. Vote on top fives. Suggest top fives. We love your suggestions. And until next time.
My favorite throwaway line of all time. We do it for Van Gogh.